It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running for this 27th day of November 2018. November almost done. And I'm happy to announce that, well, let's see. Where were we when we were so rudely interrupted by the manifest incompetence of Appalachian Power last night? Oh, yeah. Well, I can happily announce that after the power was knocked out, that we managed to finish fundraising for the entire month of November. It's all done. Chris's challenge was met. Thank you to Samson, who jumped in after the fact to make sure that we got where we needed to go. Thank you, Samson, indeed. So that means we've qualified for the Go Bucks challenge, courtesy of Steve in New York, and that means that we have qualified for the Trash Fitzwalker Stand challenge, courtesy of Ralphs. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you, Steve. That's a great big darn deal. And thanks very kindly to our buddy Randy in PA. Thanks to some interruptible power supplies, I actually had a fighting chance to get the entire studio shut down so that the various and sundry machines wouldn't just go poof. And be damaged. So thanks for that as well. So that all having been said, we have fundraising free radio tonight and tomorrow. We would have it Thursday and Friday, except I'm going to be on the road. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. We would have it Thursday and Friday too, but I'm going to be on the road. We're headed down to the hills of the North Georgia Mountains with a big old truckload of barbecue. Okay, it's not a truckload. But I was working on it last night when the program began. The butts are done. The birds are in process, and I would say that things are going to be right tasty. Tomorrow will be a day of making the Northwest Alabama hot slaw and homemade barbecue sauce, and then come Thursday morning, we are on the road, Agnes and I, and bound for at least somewhat warmer climes. Because, well, it's gotten kind of cold here. Yeah, I know, winter does that, but, it's a toasty 45 degrees exactly, up about 6.5 feet off the floor here in the fabulous Horn Studios. Down closer to the floor, it's considerably colder. I'm just a hard ass. I refuse to move into propane burning season until December. So, but it will eventually become unavoidable. And again, many, many thanks to our buddy Tom in the Bay Area, who made it possible to cut back on the purchase of those obnoxious little 1 pound propane cylinders with a kit that lets you refill a cylinder from a 20 pound saves a lot of money. Thank you, Tom. Thank you very kindly. So it was a pity that we got interrupted the way we did last night, because we had a really good crowd over in the chat room. If you'd like to be part of the Madcap Multimedia real-time wacky zany extravaganza that's the Horn Chat, run over to headon.live. Click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, jump right in, and you will be met by the likes of Mr. Bill and Otto and VT Blom. I don't know where Anatole is this evening. And then, of course, you'll be moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a spacing guild master, has not folded space today to become Man Cave because, well, it is mercifully raining again. Cold and rainy, Sparky says, there in Northern California. And we've got a skiff of snow on the ground here. Obnoxiously enough. I keep trying to tell myself that, or remind myself that, you know, every snow that falls before New Year's is pretty. And it's only after New Year's that the snow is hateful. But I don't know. I'm not feeling all warm and fuzzy about this snow. But there you go. There you go. So we have some thanks to send out, because we do have subscribers on the 27th day of the month. Mm-hmm. Thanks very kindly to Jules. And thanks very much indeed to our buddy Robert in Australia. And to Susan. Thank you very kindly, Susan and Jules and Robert. Those are our subscribers for the 27th day of the month. Oh, and thank you. Well, thank you very kindly. Thank you to Jill, who jumped in for Giving Tuesday today. It's Fundraising Free Radio, but Jill jumped in just the same. Thank you, Jill. In honor of Charitable Giving Day, Tuesday, November 27th. Thank you very much indeed. It is much appreciated. So, let's see. Where should we begin this evening? I'm going to withhold judgment just yet on the whole business of the great big kerfuffle over the alleged meeting between Paul Manafort and Julian Assange. I'm going to withhold judgment on that because we don't have any confirmation. And I do get a little weary of the speculation. But eventually it would appear that Robert Mueller is going to have to file some documentation in his case against Paul Manafort that might give us an idea of exactly what the nature of the lies were that Manafort kept telling. So we get a little antsy and we get a little fidgety, but let's just wait and see on that, because there's a bunch of other stuff that's actually verified out there. Like, for instance, and, you know, it's neither here nor there. She's an idiot. Idiots do what we expect idiots to do. But Tommy Lauren, whom I have come to think of as Ava Brown Barbie, said seeing children, barefoot children, being gassed at the U.S.-Mexican border as United States Border Patrol agents lobbed chemical weapons. You know, I mean, that's not hyperbole. A tear gas canister is a chemical weapon. She said it was the best thing that happened to her all Thanksgiving, was watching some little children get tear gassed. Behold the Republicans. Ecce GOP, right? Yeah. And others have echoed something similar. For instance, there's always the folks over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Oh yeah. It's no big deal over there at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. It's no big deal for little children to get gassed in a chemical weapon attack. Well, heck no.
Fox News alert, our nation's busiest port of entry on our southern border back open at this hour after hundreds of migrants stormed the border hurling rocks and bottles at Border Patrol agents who were forced to use tear gas to protect themselves. Ron Colburn is...
Don't you love the Orwellian language? Border Patrol agents were forced to use tear gas to protect themselves. Forced. Absolutely, they were forced. Those little toddlers gave them no choice but to resort to the use of chemical weapons.
Mm-hmm. The former National Deputy Chief of the U.S. Border Patrol agent...
Oh, wait, now, who is this asshole? Let's make sure we get his name so we can all remember him, so if we should ever happen to run across him, we can spit on the ground on the in front of his feet, shall we? Yes.
The former National Deputy Chief of the U.S. Border Patrol, he joins us right now from Phoenix. Ryan, when you look at those images, what do you think?
Well, certainly this particular group, the caravan, which has been well organized and supported from outside sources, has a core...
He said, with no accompanying documentation or citation whatsoever. Yes, but he's sure of it because, well, his imagination tells him so.
Or a violence to it that basically communicates a sense of entitlement. These are persons that one would like to think are true refugees, but they're not showing that in their actions.
When you look at the story, where apparently hundreds of them just decided, you know, we're frustrated, let's make a run at the border. There was a small hole they were able to puncture through the border wall, and they hurled all sorts of rocks, etc., at the Border Patrol agents, and then they fired the tear gas. Is that warranted?
Absolutely, and to clarify...
Yes, absolutely. Shooting, using chemical weapons on the toddlers is absolutely warranted. But wait, here comes the hockey puck part. Did I fit that? No, I didn't mention. Get the hockey puck.
Clarify, the type of deterrent being used is OC pepper spray. It's literally water, pepper, with a small amount of alcohol for evaporation purposes. It's natural. You could actually put it on your nachos and eat it.
Nice reference there. Put it on your nachos and eat it. Why the nachos reference there, Ron? I mean, you're not looking like, you don't sound like, I mean, you don't have the name of. Why nachos, Ron? Yeah, and of course, he wasn't there, so he doesn't exactly know what was used.
Huh.
Steve from Georgistan asking, haven't you heard? Getting gassed is just like putting pepper on your freedom fries. Oh, was that another metaphor that they used? Because this is sauce for your nachos. Ah, well, okay. Well, thank you, Keith. Subject line, tear gas. Bob, those toddlers were possibly carrying dirty bombs in their diapers. That's why they were forced. Forced, I tell you, forced to use tear gas. Meanwhile, Steve in New York, subject line, Steve Douche Nozzle. The next time I see him and this Ron schmuck, I will be forced to punch them in the face. Outside sources, why doesn't this fucker just have the chutzpah to say George Soros? It's the Israeli-Palestinian way of crowd control. Respond with cruise missiles from the throwing of rocks. I know, Steve. And you know what? Frankly, if a cruise missile had been used, this asshat would have been sitting right there on Fox News TV. Well, those toddlers forced us to use a cruise missile there, Steve. Mm-hmm. Oh, for goodness sake, says Ron in Raleigh. You know where the outside funding's coming from? Say it with me. George Soros. How much money does he have, anyway? Yeah. Well, you know, the sad fact of the matter is, we say that with a sense of irony and sarcasm, but the National Ruble Association, motto, A Blood-Soaked America is a Better America, the National Ruble Association actually has been arguing that. even after the anti-Semitic massacre in Pittsburgh, they're still using George Soros Bruga Bruga, International Jew Conspiracy Bruga Bruga. I mean, the National Ruble Association doesn't say the International Jew Conspiracy. They just, you know, use dog whistles to carry the freight on that. As James in Illinois says, hey, there's lots of stuff you could eat. It's brown, like, oh, just eat it. Yeah. But just put it on your nachos. Right. Man, it just makes me want to cue up the Lee Greenwood again. Doesn't it, you? Yeah, I wasn't kidding about the National Ruble Association.
So, when we're talking about this caravan, one of the things that we've really been excoriated for is for saying that this thing is being maybe not funded directly, but certainly facilitated and encouraged by left-wing groups, both in the United States and elsewhere. I did a little bit of research, and it didn't take a whole lot.
He didn't do a whole lot.
To find a pretty direct link between George Soros money and the people in the caravan.
Oh, a pretty direct link. That's scientific lingo, that is. That's mathematical lingo from the realm of statistics. Pretty direct. I didn't do a whole lot of research. I mean, if by none whatsoever we mean not a whole lot, which is right.
And getting fed. Now, I have been crucified on Twitter for this because they say that I'm pushing a conspiracy theory. But
no, and probably, and this jackass's name is Chuck Holton, H-O-L-T-O-N. Chuck, buddy, when you're gonna engage in an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory, it's probably best not to refer to yourself as having been, well, you know, crucified. Because, see, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, well, he was a Jew, and he was crucified. So unless you're saying that you're some sort of, no, probably not the best word there.
Let me just break it down for you. George Soros funds the Open Society Foundation, right? OSF funds the International Migration Institute, IMI, and IMI gives money to a whole host of other organizations, one of which is called the Alianza Americana. And if you go to the Twitter page of the Alianza Americana, you can see that they are traveling along with the caravan, bringing food and shelter and comfort to those people coming north. Now,
that seems pretty clear to me. I mean, they're giving food to people who might otherwise go hungry. They're doing that Matthew 25 stuff. Oh, my God, it is so Titanic Tuesday here on the Horn. And, well, full speed ahead, cried Admiral Chuck, Commodore Chuck of the high white wing seas, straight into the iceberg. Mm-hmm. Yeah, George Soros funds the alliance thing, and they've been known to pass out some food to people who were hungry. George Soros is part of the international Jewish conspiracy to flood our country with people we don't like. Why can't George Soros fund a flood of Scandinavian immigrants to the United States? Now, we could get behind that. Hey, that's a good question. Brother Deacon Asa asking, regarding the tear gas, did anybody check to see whether those criminal military-age toddlers had calves the size of cantaloupes? You know, like the biggest white supremacist, racist, jackass, evil son-of-a-bitch, self-made, in the entire House of Representatives, Steve King of Iowa, says they've got it. No, really, no. But wait a minute. George Soros. Let's get back to Chuck Holton of the National Ruble Association.
See that they are traveling along with the caravan, bringing food and shelter and comfort to those people coming north. Now, like I said, if we're going to be loving to people, it's one thing to give of ourselves to help them. But it's not loving if I'm taking from someone else to help them. And
Who got taken from? But here at the NRA, the National Ruble Association, we'd like to help them. We'd like to give them some. We'd like to give them some bullets. At about 1,200 feet per second, because Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, in the universe, forever under God, amen.
And in this case, we could say that these people are intending to break the law in the United States. I'm sure you'd agree. They're intending to come in illegally. And so anybody who is
Poor Duck Dynasty beard guy over here that he's interviewing hasn't gotten to get a word in edgewise yet. Intending to break the laws.
Facilitating that, whether or not they say, well, we wouldn't help them jump the fence and get in here illegally, that'd be breaking the law. But if you're in Mexico feeding these people, then you are facilitating them. Would you agree?
So let's be clear here and just note that this Chuck Holton's comments here for the National Ruble Association run on a continuum. You remember back when the South Carolina member of Congress or gubernatorial candidate, whatever kind of Republican he was, remember when he said, well, my old grandmammy once told me that if you feed a stray dog won't go away and it'll just go and make more stray dogs. And then it wasn't too awfully long back, we had another Republican saying something similar. Obviously, they favor starvation. Because, well, Jesus. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ooh-wee. And like I said, Titanic Tuesday brings a lot of high-quality stupid. But apparently, put it on your nachos, and this is the put the tear gas on the nachos argument. This is something that this is a good example of how the right wing gets a talking point, and then just hammers it and hammers it and hammers it and hammers it. That entire segment from which that put the tear gas on the nachos was part of a larger pastiche there on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and it was, well, I'm surprised any of the geriatrics who watched that program. You know, I'd almost say that, because I've been in. So one of the local hospitals survives in part by being a long-term care facility, otherwise known as a nursing home, where we warehouse our elders. And walking through there on a number of occasions, you see these elderly people, some of whom are in or out of their minds. The horror. And they're sitting in a big common room. And what's on TV? Fox. Yeah, Fox. Of course. And it, well, it went a little something like this.
So it all started yesterday morning at 11:20 when apparently the migrants started clashing with Mexican police. You can see right there on the Mexican side. They rushed a concrete canal near the pedestrian bridge, and then 50 people ran past the police, broke through a hole in the border fence, and then some of the people in the group threw rocks at agents on the other side. And apparently a number of the Border Patrol agents were hit by rocks, and that's when they started shooting the tear gas to try to disperse the crowd. Don't know if it was to disperse the crowd or a reaction to them being hit by the agents being hit by rocks, nonetheless.
But not knowing is never a preventative for Fox News TV Radio Rwanda recklessly speculating and offering up the mad fantasies emerging from the pie holes of Douchey and Kilmeade and whoever the blonde lady is in the middle at the moment. Right. But the blonde lady in the middle, who turns out to be Ainsley Earhart, she supports troops.
This is nothing new, because on the San Diego newspaper, back in November of 2013, the San Diego Union Tribune, they ran a story that sounds eerily familiar. Apparently, a group of 100 people tried to illegally cross the border. They threw rocks and bottles at Border Patrol agents, and the agents responded, and this is an image from the Border Patrol back in 2013. The agents responded by spraying pepper spray and other means to force the crowd back into Mexico. So that happened during the Obama administration.
Which is not the same thing as lobbing tear gas canisters across an international border. You know?
Administration back in 2013.
I remember seeing those images. I think there's a video of it, too.
No, you don't.
Breakers. They.
Okay, here we go. Let's get to the Ashley Ainsley Earhart patriot lady.
Some of the people who did do the rushing, some of the migrants, and they said, look, we're just frustrated. We've been sitting in Tijuana for a couple of weeks, and we're ready to go. Don't know why yesterday was a day, but you got to figure that they're looking.
Complete with the giant, humongous widescreen font, storming the border!
And they are frustrated. They would like to enter the country, the United States. They would like to apply for asylum. They would like to be accepted.
And the Trump administration, meanwhile, has throttled asylum applications down to about 100 a day. When they could process a hell of a lot more. But the maggots wouldn't like that. Glenn, I'm not sure, but you might have a point there. Glenn up in New York asks, Ainsley, was she the drummer for Frank Zappa's first band, The Mothers of Invention? Oh, no, wait, that was Ainsley Dunbar. I think we'd all be better off if it was Ainsley Dunbar. Wait a minute. Yeah, Glenn, that's worth a cowbell. Steve in New York pointing out, it's the Papists, Bob! U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops support the caravan. Border dioceses prepare to aid migrants heading to the U.S. in caravans. Mexican bishops call to protect migrants' caravan. Steve notes, so, Pope Francis is really George Soros? Dear God. And yes, I know, it's a struggle, Ron, in Raleigh. It's a real struggle, but we try to work through it. Let me get this straight, Ron says. So, George Soros is a philanthropist that gives money to many organizations, and some of that largesse trickles down to an organization that feeds hungry people. You're responsible for those people coming to America. When are we going to take responsibility for the conditions in those countries the migrants are fleeing? 56 interventions in Central and South America since 1950. Not our fault, I guess. No, not at all. What they need to do is understand some fundamental Republican principles of self-government and limited government, and they need to haul themselves up by their bootstraps there in those various and sundry countries that the United States has worked so hard to make sure had neither boots nor straps. You know, places like Honduras and El Salvador and Guatemala might be much closer to fully functioning governments and polities if the United States, acting at the behest of various and sundry corporations, hadn't worked so doggone hard to make those countries mono-economies. You know, mono-economies never work out well, because you live and die by the one thing that the mono-economy is comprised of. For instance, you know, here in West Virginia, we've got a hydrocarbon mono-economy. If it ain't coal, it's gas. If it ain't gas, it's coal. And after that, bupkis. And in Nicaragua, in Honduras, in Guatemala, in El Salvador, bananas. Yes, bananas. Yeah, those of you with a taste for history may well, in fact, recall that General Smedley Butler of the United States Marine Corps, who didn't get to go and do any particularly really noteworthy fighting in the First World War, because he was so doggone good at being posted. And, you know, he admitted this. He acknowledged this. He was so good at going and using the United States Marine Corps as enforcers for corporations and people, my friends, human beings. Thank you, Senator Romney. He was so good at going places like Nicaragua and making the country safe for United Fruit. He was a kneecapper for United Fruit. And whether, I can't remember if it was in Central America or in Haiti, but he actually got the Congressional Medal of Honor for being a corporate enforcer thug for United Fruit or some other corporate interest. Maybe Domino Sugar or some sugar consortium. And I do not remember. But it was that experience that led General Smedley Butler to write something called War is a Racket, in which he noted that the United States military in the 20th century, as he had experienced it thus far, had been primarily used as muscle for American corporations. My, how things haven't changed. You remember way, way, way back when we were starting the war against the innocent people of Iraq because George W. Bush was angry because Saddam tried to kill my daddy. Well, fuck him. We're taking him out. And we managed to kill 1 million innocent Iraqi civilians along the way. Remember that? Yeah, I do too. When they were getting going real good on that, early on, they decided they were going to get that. Well, you know, you got to give a war a good name. So it became Operation Iraqi Liberation until somebody at the Pentagon went, oh, fuck, that spells oil. Yeah. But the reason I reference all of that, going back to the mono economy, is the fact that it's conceivable that there might be a way to make things better, to keep people from wanting to leave the places that they call home, to go thousands of miles and live in the most uncertain of circumstances, just in an attempt to keep their children alive. If there was a viable economy in Guatemala, in Honduras, in El Salvador, people wouldn't be leaving. if we hadn't completely fucked up the economies there with our the ignorant, drop-dead, stupid war on drugs, we might not the problems might not exist there that exist there. If we hadn't been meddling and intervening in Central American politics since the 1950s, what's going on there might not be happening there. So the question is there a way? Is there a way forward? What if? What if? Because you know we can't be spending government money on this, and you know, it's got to be the private sector. What if some money was poured into those countries to make them viable, multifaceted economies? What if people were trained to do, oh, wait a minute, Julius Geezer says that the jobs have to be Merkin jobs because Merca first. Oh, well, never mind, silly me. Yeah. I guess we'd rather, we'd rather have people desperately try, and you know, dying along the way, whatnot, trying to get here. And when they get here, we want to make sure that they've got really, really terrible jobs, you know, picking lettuce or that's had shit water poured all over it, by the way, or maybe cleaning hotel rooms, motel rooms, swabbing toilets, that kind of thing. I guess there isn't a better way forward. Never mind. Mm-hmm. No.
But those are daunting odds when you think I'm going to just run through that little hole in the wall over there and get past all those guys with guns. I mean, yeah. That's the level of frustration.
No, it's true. But you know who else is frustrated? American citizens mm-hmm. who feel like their border's been wide open for two decades.
Yeah, because, you know, Emery and Marveline sitting there on their matching Barca loungers in Sister Fist, Talibandiana. Well, Marveline, I don't know what we're going to do. Our borders have been wide open for two decades here, and here we sit in our matching Barca loungers in Talibandiana, and we never know when the ISIS MS-13 is going to come barreling through the door. I'm upset about our open borders. And that's why we vote Republican, isn't it, Marveline?
Emery, I think it's time for your medicine again.
Yeah, well,
We have thousands of people down there on the border, and some of the images are women and children. Most of them are men, according to Kristen Nielsen. But when you look at these images, yes, you have a heart for them, but you cannot deny that they're there. And the media, if you remember, they have said this caravan, it wasn't coming, or it's not as big as everyone's saying it is, and it's not a threat. Listen.
They've been running on an imaginary caravan.
The caravan was a complete ruse.
Yeah, it was. And it was a political toy, a political chew toy for stupid little Republicans. It still does not constitute anything resembling an existential threat to the United States of America, nor could it. But, you know, Ainslie's not one to ever let a fact get in the way of terrorizing Emery and Marveline.
Yeah. I think that was Ben Rhodes, right? The man that gave us the Iran deal. Yeah, so I'd like to hear more from him about invented threats.
Well, you know, the people to the south of our border port are frustrated, but so are the American people. Yes. You know, how many times have we heard, oh, Congress has got to work together and get something done? Congress has just got to fix it. I mean, this is a big, fat mess.
yeah, I'd love to. Steve Ducey, man of the people.
He wanted.
Why won't y'all let Ainslie talk none? It just goes on and on and on.
It's not an invented threat. It's actually people are down there, thousands of people at the border, and it's a serious situation. I think everyone agrees we need immigration reform. How we get there, everyone disagrees on that.
Yeah, especially the wall.
Yeah, especially the wall. Because they don't love Merca. And by the way, that's not Brian Kilmeade. I get my Fox creeps so mixed up. That's some guy named Hegseth. But nonetheless, you know, just remember, the next time a police officer decides to pepper spray you, you can defend yourself by holding up one of those little plastic containers that they give you at the stadium or the movie theater with the nachos and the petroleum product cheese spread on it, and hold it right in front of your face and let them spray it, and then you take a bite and go, yummy. I mean, I wouldn't do that, but apparently the geniuses at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda would. Stand by for a moment, please. But let's leave those Titanic intellects alone and offer a sort of a farewell to another Titanic intellect. He's retiring at the end of this Congress. Bob Goodlatte of the Old Dominion is. And right now he's chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. And he finds himself in a pickle. Because for a long time now, he's been barking like a howler monkey butt her emails. And now the precious Ivanka's emails story has come out. Let me see. What's this? Steve in Georgistan. I think one of his medals was a Congressional Medal of Honor for fighting at Veracruz. No, not at Veracruz. I don't think Veracruz. Veracruz was the Mexican War. Smedley Butler was not in the Mexican War, Steve. That was the middle of the 19th century. Unless there was a different battle of Veracruz. But he got two Congressional Medals of Honor as a, you know, corporate enforcer. But let us continue. Bob Goodlatte, as I said, is in a pickle. Because here we have precious Ivanka, who it turns out was more callous about her emails than Hillary Clinton ever dreamed of being. And she was using a private server that was housed in Trump Tower. How's about that? But Bob Goodlatte of Virginia, he has a ready excuse.
All right. And just quickly before we go, since these emails are of such importance to you, Republican Senator Ron Johnson, obviously on your committee, Trey Gowdy and Oversight Committee Chairman, they are interested in pursuing Ivanka Trump's emails to get to the bottom of exactly what happened there.
Just for the sake of clarity, Ron Johnson is a senator from Wisconsin. He's not a member of the House of Representatives like Bob Goodlatte is. Just saying.
Do you support that?
Well, certainly, to be consistent, they need to inquire about what occurred there. I have no problem with that. I do think, of course, it's very different to send private emails about matters that are not classified information. There's a criminal penalty imposed for doing that when you have classified information that is transmitted improperly. as was the allegation, and I think the facts now support with regard to Hillary Clinton. But certainly, when things like this come up, it's important people understand they need to make sure that they're doing what they can. And it's awfully tough, as everyone knows, when you're sending emails about a lot of different things, to make sure that you're doing it according to the rules in the White House or wherever you're doing it.
I'm sure.
Wait, here comes the comeback from. From Aaron Burnett. This is good. Now let's be clear about this. Bob Goodlatte says that it's awfully difficult for poor, precious Ivanka to follow the laws of the United States.
You're doing it according to the rules in the White House or wherever you're doing it.
I'm sure Hillary Clinton would agree with you. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Oh, clever. Oh, burn. Yes. Now, Bob Goodlatte has done everything in his power to harass and harangue and hector Hillary Clinton for years. But, well, you know, precious Ivanka, I mean, you could inquire about it. I mean, you wouldn't want to like put so much pressure on the FBI for examining and disclosing and investigating that you'd have to do something like double the number of staffers handling House Republican requests for information, you know, like the FBI had to do because of people like Bob Goodlatte. Well, no, not people like, but because of Bob Goodlatte. Bob Goodlatte requested so many records on Hillary Clinton that the FBI really did have to double their staff all the way up to 54. Yeah. 54 people handling Bob Goodlatte's requests for information about her emails. And just in case you were wondering, he's still on Hillary Clinton's emails. He subpoenaed James Comey and Loretta Lynch just last week to testify about her emails. So far, not much in the way of subpoenas from Bob Goodlatte for precious Ivanka's emails. They were great. They reminded me of Ivanka. Dear God, that just occurred to me. Oh, I'm going to have to bleach my brain after the program's over. Ooh. Ew. 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 You know where my mind is right now, don't you? Ew. Dear Ivanka, just a note to tell you how much Daddy loves you. I think about you all the time. I think about you in the shower. No, when I'm in the shower. Okay, when you're in the shower, too, I think about you. Love, Daddy. God, wouldn't it be amazing if that was... Surely not. Well, don't assume it isn't. We'd probably best not be calling anybody Shirley. Well, that's true, Stephen New York says. Here's the difference between Hillary and Donald's daughter. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. Yes, indeedy. It's okay if you're a Republican. Oh, no worries, Stephen from Georgia Stan. Steve from Georgia says that business about Veracruz was from memory. No worries. No worries at all. Maybe there was some battle of Veracruz during the early parts of the 20th century. It's entirely possible. Yeah, Titanic Tuesday has a broad sweep. Indeed. Let's see. Mississippi is in the Central Standard Time Zone, so that means it's only 5:49 there. The polls are still open. We'll find out a little bit about okay, well, by God, it was Veracruz. There it was. See, you knew and I didn't, Steve. Good for you. 22 April 1914 at the Battle of Veracruz. I'd missed on that. I think, I don't know if I knew that or not, that in 1914 the United States was thinking about a full-scale invasion of Mexico. God, when is this country not thinking about a full-scale invasion of Mexico? Historically, it goes back to the close of the 18th century and the beginning of the 19th. One of the things that was alleged against Aaron Burr was that he had a plot to set himself up as the king of Mexico. And then some southern planter types thought, you know, that wouldn't be a terrible idea. And some of the long-range plans of the Confederacy were to, after they had beaten the Union and become a separate nation, invade Cuba, invade Mexico, invade the rest of the Caribbean, and set up an entire Western Hemisphere slave empire. And as our buddy Flavio up in Wisconsin can tell you, they actually, after the war, set up a little slaver colony down in Brazil. Mm-hmm. Good call, Steve. Good call. But anyway, the polls won't close for a little bit in Mississippi, I doubt. Maybe another hour or so. And we'll learn a little bit more about Mississippi this evening. The massive turnout that sent Doug Jones to the Senate instead of a pedophile creeper, well, that portended maybe a little bit of hope for the state of Alabama. Now, the question is, will Mississippi give the country a reason for a little bit of hope for them? And my guess is no. My guess is the state of Mississippi will, as it so often does, disappoint the United States again. And they will probably send Cindy Hyde Smith back to the Senate where she can be the cipher that... Well, I mean, look, a trained monkey could do what Cindy Hyde Smith has done as a Republican in the Senate. She takes her little paw and she puts it on the yes button when it's time to vote yes, and she takes her little paw and she puts it on the no button when it's time to vote no, and yes and no is determined entirely by what Julius Geezer and or chinless Mitch McConnell want. And so she'll get a few more years to do that. And our suspicions and sad certainties about Mississippi will be confirmed once more. But never fear. The same dude you heard blathering away a few minutes ago on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, Pete Hegseth. Well, Pete Hegseth. Jumped out in full-throated defense of Cindy Hyde Smith. You know, the fact that, like I said last night, the fact that she went to a segregation academy, I don't think you can hold that against her. Children have to do what their parents make them do, up to and including going to substandard schools that are created solely to make sure that the precious little white children of white parents in Mississippi wouldn't have to be edumacated or, God knows, be outperformed by any of those children. Yeah, little African-American children. Kid can't be held responsible for that. No way. But the fact that Cindy Hyde-Smith, as an adult and as a parent in her own right, made the active choice to send her daughter to a segregation academy, well, that's another matter entirely, isn't it? But it's the public hanging, otherwise known as lynching aspect, that created all the real trouble for proud Confederate Cindy Hyde Smith. But never fear, Pete Hegseth is here.
We bring it out to the couch. This is a very red state, and it's down to the wire now.
This is that program called Outnumbered, where four women in very short dresses and very high heels entertain a conversation with a guy in the middle, and somehow or another they think that that's cute. Outnumbered. And this individual says that it's right down to the wire. I don't think it's right down to the wire. I think it would be great if Mike Espy could win. It would be a gut punch to Julius Geezer. But I kind of expect Mississippians to do what Mississippians, white Mississippians, do best. Because see, in Alabama, you had a consortium. No, that's probably not the right word. A group of white Alabama Republicans who said, "Nope, this is just too far. We can't put a mall creeper in the Senate, even if he does oppose abortion." And between the people who wrote in somebody else, the white Republicans who wrote in somebody else, and the African Americans who moved in force, they managed to keep Roy Tola Moore out of the Senate. I don't know if that kind of groundswell exists in Mississippi Stan. Because remember, Roy Tola Moore lost by roughly the same number of votes as Republicans who wrote in somebody else's name. And is there anybody running a write-in campaign in Mississippi? In the course of following this election, I have not seen anything to that effect. I have not seen any polling. Scott in San Diego wants to know, in that Senate contest, has there been any polling? I haven't seen it. I would not expect it to show a neck-and-neck race. But let's go back to let's go back to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Because when it comes to defending racism and lynching, nobody does it quite like Fox News TV Radio Rwanda.
How do you call it?
It is down to the wire. It's a red state. Hyde-Smith is going to win. The polling shows that. The attempts by the media to further, listen, you can say graceless things, foolish things. It doesn't make them racist things in every way that you have said them. I really think people that know her,
you think so she's a talking, nice, talking she's, about they attending say she's a lynching nice lady. Is not a race, that doesn't have a racial connotation. Who
she's
was
a nice
getting
lady
lynched?
With a gift for saying graceless things. First of all,
a nice
I don't want to get into.
Who cares?
I don't want to get into this.
Oh, you're not coming back. She doesn't have blonde hair. Two, she's challenging the white male defending Cindy Hyde-Smith as a graceless lady. Graceless? Why, sir, I will call you out upon the field of honor at dawn. Slap, slap. My second will visit your second, who will make the arrangements. That, by the way, the woman who apparently isn't having any of Pete Hegseth's hogwash is Jessica Tarlov. And she's right. You think talking about having a lynching that doesn't have a racial connotation? Who was getting lynched? Well, there's that. Sorry, had to sort out the stress line phone. The Bluetooth had dropped. We'll go there in a minute. Let's finish with this stunningly horrible clip.
Antics of it, but there were...
You have to, though.
Public,
she said lynching.
Wait.
Lady
lynched.
With a gift for saying graceless things. First of all,
a nice
I don't want to get into...
Who cares?
I don't want to get into the semantics of it, but...
See, Pete Hogwash doesn't want to get into the semantics of it, but the semantics of it are the it of it. The question is, what kind of flippin' racist idiot do you have to be to make a lynching comment in Mississippi in 2018? The secondary question beyond that is, what in the hell is wrong with people that they give somebody a pass for doing that?
There were
you have to, though.
Public,
she said lynching.
Public. She did not say lynching.
She said
public hangings. Which were referred to lawful executions at certain times in the 19th and 20th century.
Lawful executions. That's the fallback now. That's the explanation for what Cindy Hyde-Smith was talking about, even though that was not what she was talking about. A public hanging is cleaned up language in Mississippi Southernese. Why, if he invited me to a lynching, I'd be right there in the first row. And by the way, I guess you could say that lynchings were often public in nature, given the fact that white folks would gather around and watch the lynching and take pictures and bring picnic lunches and pass the jug and whatnot. It refers to lawful executions, is what P. Hogwash says.
No, really, they're I'm not saying
it's
you're playing on the field you want to play in, which is saying this lady's racist.
No.
Well, that's not playing. That's just observing verifiable fact, Pete Hogwash.
What she's saying is
her public career shows that she isn't. And there
actually, her public career doesn't show that she isn't. Her public career shows that, well, in the course of her life, she's sent her daughter to a segregation academy. In her public life, she has tried to hide the fact that she attended a segregation academy in her own right. In her public life, she has posed holding a musket while wearing a Confederate hat down at the filthy mansion that was built with the blood, sweat, and tears of slave labor and inhabited by Jefferson Davis, a man who committed treason against the United States of America. I mean, imagine, Jefferson Davis was actually a member of the cabinet at one point. He was a senator from Mississippi. I've mentioned this story before, but it's a great story. There's a big old statue that stands at the very top of the Capitol Dome. And it is a statue of Liberty. Sit, Liberty. Sit. Woof! And when it was originally conceived by the sculptor, Liberty was wearing a Liberty hat. Now, these were hats that were, among other things, made popular during the French Revolution. A Liberty cap. It looks a little bit like a sort of sawed-off Santa Claus hat. And the Statue of Liberty, not that Statue of Liberty, the one on top of the right, was wearing a Liberty cap. Well, when the prototype was seen, one senator objected to the statue wearing a Liberty cap and said it ill befits a free people to have a symbol on their capital that is wearing a Liberty cap when they already have liberty. The man who said that was Senator Jefferson Davis, who was motivated primarily by the fact that at that time the abolition movement was roiling the country. We had not entered the Civil War yet, and he didn't want anybody running around thinking they had a right to liberty just because they was in the United States of America, if you know who I'm talking about. Yeah? Right. So, back to Pete Hogwash.
There are a lot of big issues that people vote about, and they're trying to make it about race at the last minute. This is a Republican state. She's going to win, and I don't think playing the race card wins at the polls.
Okay.
She didn't say lynching. Okay.
Well, public hanging, public lynching, it has connotations, especially in the South, for the fact that African Americans were lynched. She also wore a hat with the Confederate flag on it. She went to a segregationist school, but I'm not here to call her a racist. I'm here to say that I agree with you, and I think that she is going to win this election. It's not like Doug Jones, who was running against an alleged pedophile, and even so, he only won by 1.7 points. I understand it as the Deep South, but for you to just say that this is graceless, to make a joke that it was so utterly inappropriate and should have been condemned by everybody, I think is irresponsible.
You're impugning her motives and saying right. It was.
Do you think it's funny? Is that your sense of humor?
I didn't say.
He's holding back a smirk. I didn't say it was funny. Hung Like Jesus says, could you please give a short rundown of Haley Barbour? A real short one, because I heard him speak the other day, and he sounded like a Dixiecrat out of Central Casting. Well, you could say that he is. The fact of the matter is, he's an old, somewhat reconstructed racist. He's also a grifter. He jumped way out in front of the line, if I recall correctly, back during Katrina, because his vacation home was damaged by the flood waters. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he was a dear friend of Dim Leader. At one point in time, he was chairman of GOP, RNC. He was chairman of the RNC. But there's going to be, look, anybody down there, to one degree or another, and in one manner or another, is going to be marked by the legacy of the South. It's inescapable. It's the question of how one is marked by that legacy of the South that becomes a sort of telling character issue. some people try to remain, well, no, I'm not a racist bone in my body. I just think there's a difference. You get the idea. But everybody gets touched by it. That is because the institution of slavery was so pervasive, and then the legal system that arose to maintain the oppressive conditions of slavery after slavery was constitutionally ended following a massive amount of bloodshed. Involved everyone in it. What Jim Crow did is it said that it doesn't, if you're a white man, if you're a white person, and you are dirt damn poor, you can at least get up every morning and say one thing. Well, thank Jesus, I ain't black. And based upon that one factor, the entire social structure coalesced and involved and vectored into every single person in the given Jim Crow South states. But she'll probably be reelected. Steve from Georgia Stan says, I have the same sickening feeling about her. I have the same sickening feeling about Hyde Smith that I did Brian Kemp. Steve also says, I found a bottle of 2015 Cabernet Sauvignon from Cane Creek Vineyards here in Dahlonega. It would kick ass with your barbecue. I'm not going to think about it or even bring it. That would be cruel. Don't do that. Don't bring it. Remember, I can't do that. Steve in New York, by the way, says, we don't want to get into the words of what she said. You know what? That's true. David from South Carolina, who has a bit of an ear, says, graceless lady stuck in my ear. Totally irrelevant comment. Oh, no, it's not irrelevant at all. Graceless lady appears in Wild Horses. Should we call in Mick and Keith for commentary? Recorded right there in the shoals. Yes, it was. Good call. Wait a minute. Cowbell for that, David. Yes, indeed. A little bit of more mail before we run to the phones. Dave from Talibandiana says, to my Horn Family Community Congregation, why do these guys use religious language to justify their hatred? I know this ain't prayer meeting Wednesday yet, but if we point out that they've got dark money sources, we call it white money around here, Dave, are we just being racist? No, I don't get it. I wish you all the best. I'm going through some stuff with my family right now, so if you don't hear from me for a while, please forgive me. Know that you're all close to my heart. Your buddy Dave from Talibandiana. Meanwhile, Reggie says, Liberty, I almost spit take to my whiskey. Oh, yeah, sure, rub it in. Yeah. And our dear friend Jude in the far northwest says, subject line, plus, as you well know, Liberty is the highest point in our nation's capital. She oversees it all. I love this, Bob. I know. And isn't it ironic that Jefferson Davis didn't want any reference to Liberty, didn't want any Liberty caps on Liberty? You know, let's not let people start thinking they got the real thing or anything. All right, let's run over to the stress line and check in with Reggie. Hey, Reggie. Yo, Reggie.
Hello?
Hello?
Bob?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
I was just thinking
about you.
I thought this was Reggie. I'm sorry. I must have screwed up somewhere along the way.
Well, you did.
I guess I swapped out calls. What's happening?
Well, I was just thinking about you. You drowned in a vat of whiskey. Oh, death, where is thy sting?
Oh, grave, where is thy victory? Oh, death, where is thy sting?
Oh, the W.C. Fields. I couldn't believe it. Every time I hear that, I think about you. Come on now. You're going to have to give it up on your temperance when you're down there with all your friends slinging around that barbecue and everything. I'm sure you'll have to have a drink or two.
I don't see it as being terribly likely, Jim. Heck, I don't even know if we're going to have room enough for the hoop skirt for the barbecue at 12 Oaks.
I'm just wondering. That's going to be quite an affair down there. I wish everybody well and their attendance. Hopefully everybody has a real good time.
I think it'll be a fine time.
I don't know Mike Malloy, and I'm not sure about his book, but what's the name of it?
Colored Ice Cream.
Colored Ice Cream. That's a curious title.
I'm anxious to read it and find out where the title comes from.
I know he was authorizing his semi-publications of people, I think, in installments. I'm not sure. Maybe he was talking about something else. I don't listen to him a whole lot. But, he has been through some rough times, I understand.
Well, he had a little rough patch of luck there for a couple of months, and hopefully that's passed.
Well, I think I could identify with that. Now, going back to this lady in Mississippi, I saw her just a few minutes ago on TV, and she looks like a really debilitated image of Spoozy Kurt with her hand stuck in a light socket.
You know, you're not the first person to note the resemblance to Swoozy Kurtz.
She does. I mean, if you...
Oh, no, up and down, Jim, up and down.
But her mouth, if she doesn't open it from top to bottom, it's like it goes from side to side. And she looks like she's crying that whole line, yeah. And...
Well, I loved it when the reporter was chasing her. Not chasing her, just following along as she went to the car, asking her valid, pointed questions, the kind that a reporter asks, and the only thing she said, "Well, thank you for coming today. Well, thank you for coming today. Thank you for coming today. Thank you for coming today." Slam door, run away.
She's got a big rope up her butt, and they just pull it and talk. That's exactly what she looks like.
Well, no, all that thank you for coming today was somebody had gotten to her and said, "Listen, Cindy, if you say a word, you're going to fuck up, Cindy. Just say thank you. Just say thank you. Just remember your manners, class."
They could tell her underwear had fallen down around her feet. That's what she'd say, too. That's what needs to happen to her. If for the waistband of her panties could slip, see if she could step out of them.
Yeah, I don't want to be there for that, Jim. Thanks for the image. There went my peaceful night's sleep.
Well, I'm sure you're not going to think about that. I just hope that she loses. And the polls close in 40, for about 40 minutes.
Yep.
Give her a second or two. So I just wonder what her opponent's chances are.
It's a mess because, among other things, it's a runoff. But... Even if you, and the number of people who probably know that know this, given the way that Americans are with our civics, and given the Byzantine nature of Southern election laws, even if you didn't vote in the general election, you can still vote in the runoff. I'll bet you there's a bunch of people in Mississippi don't know that.
Now, Bob, nobody can be that stupid.
Really? Wait, Jim, are we talking about the same country?
I just don't see how anybody could be that stupid, but I guess that's wishful thinking on my part. How's that?
Well, okay, I'll grant you that, but the fact of the matter is, there's still a lot of people in Mississippi, and there's still a lot of people all over the South who quietly go about the business of being a racist, but they don't, you know, except for the ones that are, well, they generally, they don't talk about it out in the open. They just talk about it behind closed doors. You know those people,
well,
Jim. I know you know those people.
Well, I hope that the people who voted for her the first time think that. And the ones who voted for her opponent, I hope they remember that they can vote again. That would be wonderful. You know, it would be wonderful if it would mean that they would kick her out of the Senate. My Lord, she's a disgrace.
Well, the most beautiful part of that would be the real kick in the tush that would be to Donald Trump after he made two. Count them two separate Clavering rallies down in Mississippi yesterday.
I'm sure
you've seen or heard the coverage by now that he fancies himself an Elvis lookalike.
No, I haven't heard that. Really?
Really? Up in Tupelo, because Tupelo was where the king was born. He said, you know, I don't want to be conceited or anything, but in my younger years, people told me that the person I most looked like was Elvis.
In his younger years. That's a joke. Hell, I see Trump in his younger years, 40 years ago, 30 years ago. He never looked like Elvis Presley. That's the last person I'd think of him looking like. Now, I'd love to get a hold of that hair of his and do an Elvis comeback on him, and you see how much camouflage would be destroyed.
Well, see, that's the confusing thing, Jim, about the English language. Because you say, I'd like to get hold of that hair of his. It is my position that Donald Trump only has one hair. It's about 90 feet long, and every morning they have to wind it and curl it and position it all over his head.
Okay, all right, that's all right. But I tell you one thing: whoever is in charge of the machinations involving his structure of. His tonsorial structure.
Well, Ivanka said she used to do it. Maybe she still does. She said it.
Well,
she laughed. She laughed at him and told one of her friends it takes about 2 hours every day.
Well, all I can say, whoever's doing it, they are a master of camouflage. But I'm afraid that in spite of their best efforts, it just doesn't work.
Well, goddamn, if that thing ever comes apart, he's going to look like he's standing there in a ghillie suit.
Yeah, I'm afraid.
So I got to ask you. The phones are ringing all over the place, so unfortunately, I do have to move on. But I got to ask you, Jim. Was it raucous and loud there Friday night?
It was. I heard the band playing and everything. I could see everybody. It was quite a spectacle. It was quite a football game too. I mean, I thought the score sounds like it was a basketball game. I mean, the combined score was over 100.
Yes, it was. The defense has agreed to stay on the bus.
Well, Phil, those boys have a lot of heart. They played a good game as far as I'm concerned. You know how I feel about football. But it was nice for me to be able to look out the window and see what was going on. But nonetheless, you should
yeah,
be
there's,
proud of your
There's nothing quite like the spectacle of a Mountaineer tailgate. And you know, they basically just shut the city down when it's going to be a night game because you know there's not going to be a sober. Well, that stadium right there, whether you realize it or not, Jim, that stadium right there on a game day, especially a big game day like that, becomes the third largest city in West Virginia all by itself, the stadium.
2 days ahead of time, you had RVs parked up there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, I was expecting a sofa to go flying out of a window somewhere, but I don't think any of that happened.
The ordering patterns, the inventory patterns for the liquor and beer distributors in the greater Morgantown area change in advance of games like that. Goes through the roof.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I mean, you know,
one of the funniest things, and I know you have from time to time enjoyed a little bottled in bond. And I've seen this happen at Mountaineer tailgates more times than I can count. Somebody will haul out a 1.75 of Evan Williams or George Dickel or Jack Daniels or Jim Beam or whatever. You know, they don't spend a whole bunch of it, but a 1.75 liter bottle, and they'll break the seal and they'll take the cap off. And they'll throw that cap as far as they can get it to go, and just look up and say, "Well, we ain't gonna need that no more." And take a bit and take a big old swaller and pass it to the next person, and who takes a big old swaller. And usually, tradition has it that the so-called dead soldier will come back eventually to its originator, but it just gets going and it.
Sure it does. Well, let me ask you about one more thing. You know, concerning this this business with the gentleman who is Mr. Trump's nemesis, and that Mueller, and he has completely negated that other guy's plea agreement.
No, he hasn't. He hasn't negated it. What he's said is he's been lying like a rug when he promised to tell the truth, but Manafort does not get to back out of the guilty plea.
Okay. Well, God, there she is on TV right now. Oh, my Lord, what an ugly woman. You know, I'll say truly, she looks like she's had some makeup artist, like Lon Chaney, do her.
Some makeup artist like Lon Chaney. Wait a minute.
I mean,
that's unfair, Jim.
It's just true. I mean, all she has to do, and she'll receive that. I know you got somebody waiting. Did you ever see that movie called Crybaby?
Oh, yeah. Yes. I've seen Crybaby.
Remember that girl whose face was so twisted? That when a cow ran into her, the cow goes and goes back the other way.
Yes.
Scared cow. That's exactly
but see, this is very shallow and mean. And somebody, Bob, I can't believe you're all misogynistic. This is where Southern English outstrips other forms of English, because there are so many beautiful descriptors, and it comes from the Scots-Irish tradition. And, you know, I'd looked at her, and I could hear one of my Southern West Virginia buddies in the back of my mind going, "God damn it, Bob, that woman could make a freight train take a dirt road."
Well, yes, he could. Or make the head stop on the clock. Lord, I could just... Anyway.
She looks like a million every year of it.
And she's just as mean as she looks, too. And just as dangerous as possible. And I just hope that she doesn't get that victory tonight, because that would certainly help us. And, you know, I'll say this.
Well, you know, 52-53, Jim, it's really not, I mean, they're all going to march lockstep with Trump one way or the other. And
I don't know, Bob.
You don't think?
I don't know. I think they're going to get tired of having to put up with his shit.
Well, if they see him weakening.
I mean, you know, even an idiot can realize that this man is not right, that he acts like a spoiled child, he stalks his little foot, and the minute something doesn't go his way, he's either on his Twitter account saying all kinds of stuff, and he's got people all around him who try to hold him from doing it, and he does it anyway. And, you know, even a railway iron will wear out, and nobody can maintain their loyalty to that man to see what he's doing to their party.
And while it is entirely speculative, and I freely acknowledge that, if he gets himself into some deep shit and it turns out that there's credible, verifiable, convictable information about him through the Mueller investigation, and I'd like to believe there is, but you know, until I'm just withholding until we see and hear something from him, then maybe Republicans will have to start thinking about whether or not they want to keep their wagons hitched to his star.
Well, we'll see, and I think that some of them, I don't know what's wrong with Lindsey Graham. I mean, Lindsey Graham, they're in love, and I don't know if Lindsey Graham had a crush on Gorgeous George or not, but that's who Trump
he dragged Precious Lindsey all the way to Mississippi yesterday.
That's what I saw, yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, where are they going to realize that it's time for their Ric Flair? Who Trump reminds me of somewhat is Ric Flair. He needs to retire, as you know, and just go somewhere.
Well, Jim, you speak a greater truth than maybe you realize, because every time somebody says, you know, Donald Trump had a reality show, The Apprentice, I think, no, that's way too recent. Donald Trump's TV career begins in professional wrestling. And that's a fact. We're talking about a guy we're talking about a guy who shaved the head of Vince McMahon. We're talking about a guy who hit somebody with a chair. I mean, that is his métier.
Oh, Lord.
Get on YouTube. Oh, my God. Just get on YouTube, Jim. Look up Donald Trump WWE. It's all there.
He used to raffle, quote, or
well, no,
raffle.
he was a manager. I mean, you know how the drama of professional wrestling works out, and he was put in opposition to his dear friend Vince McMahon, and so there was a whole story arc.
You know, I would love to see Trump in a pair of those tights as they wear.
You might. The rest of us don't want to.
I would love to see him get up in the ring and just say, come on, anybody, get one of those fight cages. That would be even better than the end of Bruno and the way that movie ended. But let me get off here. You take care, and I hope you have a good time down at your set at.
Well, I hope they turn. I hope they turn you loose soon. And the next thing we hear from you is from back at home, sweet home.
Hey, well, see you, Chief. Really, but you take care.
All right,
and thank.
All right, see you, Jim.
Bye.
Bye now. It's our buddy Jim calling from up my old stomping grounds. Up there at Harvard on the Mon. And let's keep things rolling and run over to, thanks very kindly to Joyce. Joyce just signed up as a new Patreon subscriber. Thank you very kindly, Joyce. That's wonderful. Let's run over and check in with Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Bob. How you doing, sweetie?
I'm making it, I think.
That's all we can do. Hey, you know, and I want to read something to you, and I want you to guess. I want to see if you can guess where I'm reading this from.
Okay.
There will be a day sometime in the near future when this guide will not have to be published. That is when we as a race will have equal rights and privileges in the United States.
That is from the Green Book.
Yes.
Do I get a cookie or anything? I mean, aren't you proud of me?
I'm incredibly proud of you because I knew you'd know it. It was, you know, it was a no-brainer. I just lobbed you a, what is it, when they baseball term?
You just threw one right over the fat part of the plate.
Okay, there you go. So yeah, you know, because I'm listening about, you know, Miss Cindy Hatrod.
Miss Cindy White Smith.
Miss Cindy White Smith. Yes, with her thank you very much and her lynchings and, you know, and stuff like that. Because I'm thinking, you know, when Victor Hugo Green wrote the Green Book, you know, and for those of you in the Horn family who are not aware of what the Green Book is or was, rather. Because I didn't know about it again. Remember how I talk about my introduction to African-American history was not until I was in my 30s. And I had never even heard of such a thing called the Green Book. It was a guide that was published from 1936 to 1966 to help Black Americans be able to travel throughout the country to places where it was safe for them to, you know, buy gas, get food, have lodging. They even had, it was basically a lot of the places were their first Airbnbs because the private homes would allow people, you know, to sleep there. So, you know, they wouldn't, you know, get killed or humiliated because, you know, Black. And so, you know, as the way this country is going, I'm thinking that we still need to publish the Green Book. Because they stopped publishing. They thought it was going to become obsolete after the passage of the Civil Rights Act. And the last time, I think the last edition was published in 1966, which was the year I was born. But no, how much has changed there, Bob? I mean, I don't have to worry. Okay.
On its face, a lot has changed. I would say
a
that
lot has changed.
I would say that. You could kind of replace the Green Book now with maybe the Southern Poverty Law Center's map of white supremacist hate organizations in the United States.
Yes, yes, or cities where it's not too keen for Black people to go to or live. Because I just tuned in when you're playing the clip of Mr. Hogwash trying to, you know, say, oh, she was just being graceless. And old girl was like, she was calling bullshit on that. She's like, no. She may not have said, she didn't say lynching. Well, motherfucker, she didn't have to say lynching. It was implied?
It comes, if you just see it in print or even hear her say it, you know, they tried to drown it out with that damn freight train horn. But it is graceless in the sense that it is an awkward turn of phrase. And I'm gonna say this, and it's hateful, okay? Not to you, Tracy. You know. But it's a hateful thing to even contemplate. But okay, she said, if he invited me to a public hanging, I would sit in the first row if he invited me to a public hanging. Now, let's say that in Southernese. Well, I'd sit in the front row if he invited me to a lynching.
Mm-hmm.
Now, which one sounds stilted, and which one sounds like a natural Southernism?
I think I sit in the front row if he invited me to a lynching.
See?
And I'm not even Southern.
And see, that there's a whole bunch of phraseology that got cleaned up a little bit in Southern English.
Mm-hmm.
There are still people who will, from time to time, and we go back to the Uncle Remus stories for this. Oh, we're having one of our cultural moments, aren't we, Tracy?
I love it when we have the cultural moments, Bob.
I do, too. in the original Uncle Remus stories, there is a word that precedes the words tar and baby.
Wait, there's a word that precedes tar baby?
Yes.
Oh, God. What is it?
Do you really have to ask?
Oh, okay, never mind. Okay, I'm...
And see that...
I'm like, I'm just kidding.
If
so
you,
They kept tar baby, but they gated the N word. Is that what?
Yes.
And like tar baby was supposed to make it better.
Well, it
because I've been called a tar baby, and I promise you, I didn't like it.
Well, okay, to call anybody a tar baby is deeply insulting. But if you, and this is not a defense, okay? This is just literary analysis, okay? Or critical analysis, if you will. The story itself of the tar baby is a trick that Br'er Rabbit played on Br'er Fox.
Right.
And, of course, even the dialect, Br'er, is Southern Black English.
Mm-hmm.
which by the way, is not an ignorant English. It is not unlearned English. It is a beautiful English.
Has anybody ever told you, I'm going to learn you, boy?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody ever tells you or told you that I'm going to learn you, boy, that usually entails somebody's about to get their ass beat.
There's a stomping coming, but just to go back for a minute. Okay, so the story is that the rabbit wants to get one over on the fox, you know, because the fox always trying to kill the rabbit. In many ways, the Br'er Rabbit stories are a distant ancestor of Bugs Bunny.
Mm-hmm.
So he makes a baby out of tar.
Of tar.
Now, to the best of my knowledge, there is no tar, but is black. Okay.
Last time I checked, it would be like saying, is there anything other than black coal?
Right. Ain't no white coal out there. But tar is sticky, and it's gooey, and once you get into it, it's damn difficult to get out of it.
Yeah, have you ever had to tar your own roof?
Right. And so if you when the fox grabs hold of that tar baby, because he's avaricious and greedy and stuff, it sticks to him, and he can't get it off of him. And so the tar baby aspect of the story, of that, it's a fable, like Aesop's fables. A tar baby is to embrace something that you're never going to be able to get away from again. And something that's going to follow you around, and you can't get shed of it. That aspect of the fable...
And everybody's going to know what you did.
Right, and that aspect of the fable is kind of race neutral. But the fact, when the story was originally published, it had that word in front of it, took away any neutrality it could ever have had.
No, exactly. I mean, it's like, and it's so funny because when I was a kid, and when we were kids, Song of the South, okay? I mean, that's
well, Song of the South is based. Yeah, Song of the South is based on the Uncle Remus stories.
On the Uncle Remus stories. And I, of course, me being a kid, had no idea, you know, what this story was, you know, was really about. And it's like, I think that movie, they burnt the celluloids of Song of the South, because it is like another movie that they, I don't understand why, because I actually like the movie, Porgy and Bess. I used to watch. They used
well, that's
to show
an,
that
yeah, I mean, that's an opera. I mean, that's Gershwin. You know.
Right. It's Gershwin. And I mean, actually, they've had a revival of it, you know, on Broadway. But, you know, somebody said it was racist. And I, you know, I,
I have a pretty good racist radar. And, you know, and like I said, last time I saw it, I was a kid. So, but my, if memory serves correct, I don't see anything overtly racist about the story. I
mean, you know, there, and that, but that's the thing. There's no hard and fast continuum, Tracy, because, for instance, let's take Porgy and Bess and put it on the in the pan of the balance. Now let's take Birth of a Nation and put it in the other pan, and we're gonna call the scale that we're using racism. And if you got Porgy and Bess over here in one pan and Birth of a Nation in the other, and on the racism scale, you know, Birth of a Nation is going to go boom, straight to the ground.
Straight, it's going to go through the,
yeah, I mean, because there's no doubt about it.
There's no argument that it isn't. Especially, I mean, it was racist when people, I mean, when the movie came out, it was racist. It was like you said, there was no doubt about it. It was, you know, about Reconstruction and, you know, having white people in blackface and, you know, justifying the KKK and the lynching of black men and, you know, showing the legislature of black men.
And the fact that it was based upon a book that was simply called
The Klansman.
And, hey, The Klansman was the hero.
Right.
And so, you know, it's like a tweet I got a little bit ago from Robert listening, who says, Cindy Hyde-Smith is a racist. All evidence and facts show she's a racist. She knew her words were offensive. She's racist. And it's just, I mean, it really is just that simple. I don't want her to be a racist because I'm looking for a political edge. I would like to be able to look at the entire country and say, nope, not a racist, not a racist, not a racist, not a racist. I would like for there to be no racist in the United States of America, but I live in reality world, Tracy.
Exactly, and that's the thing. I mean, we live in a country where now it is, you know, like you said, you know, for a while, at least the racists had the common courtesy to keep, you know, to keep their racism behind closed doors, and the nudge, nudge, wink, winks, and the dog whistles, and the microaggressions, and stuff like that. I mean, anybody with any sense saw what was going on, but at least we're like, okay, you know what? That's just these people. It is what it is. Let's freedom ring. But now, these they don't care because they have, you know, the orangutan. And he has given them carte blanche. He has given them their bona fides to say, hey, I can do whatever the fuck I want. I can say whatever the fuck I want to say, and nothing is going to happen. I mean, there's isolated incidents where, you know, you got Roseanne Barr who lost her show, and, you know, there's the peppering of the few people who have been called out because of their racism, and things have, you know, they've lost shows, they've done this, they've done that, lost endorsements, you know, and stuff like that. However, it is still going on because somebody like Miss Cindy Hyde, there's no way that she should be running for political office. I mean, remember when Jeff Sessions was up for a judgeship in Alabama and they said the man was too racist to be a judge in Alabama? I long for those days.
Yeah, but look, we're sending. I want to be clear
that this person was so racist that they shouldn't even hold public. Well, he was still a senator or whatever, but still, at least he didn't become a judge. That's right. He's not even the attorney, because I haven't spoken to you since he got dropkicked out of the attorney general.
Right. Yeah. Hey, but going back to Cindy Hyde-Smith for a minute, I want to be clear about something. Even if she hadn't made the racist comment that she did, the fact of the matter is, it should have been enough to keep her out of the Senate that she posed down at Beauvoir, Jefferson Davis's home, while holding a musket and wearing a Confederate cap.
Confederate hat. That should have been enough.
While at that event, she declared, Beauvoir represents Mississippi history at its best.
Mm-hmm. At its best.
A slave plantation represents Mississippi at its best.
Didn't she go on and on about being a proud member of the NRA as well?
Oh, yeah. She couldn't not be. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Here's another one to ponder. Ron and Raleigh just wrote in, when I was a kid, I never found Amos and Andy racist. Most of the characters worked and were upstanding citizens, except for the Kingfish, who it turns out was a lot like Donald Trump. But it's the, you know, it's the broad accents. And it's the...
He's not talking about the Amos and Andy that was on the radio. He's talking about the one that was on television, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Because the one that was on the radio was two white guys.
Right. It was basically radio blackface.
Right. Well, it's like the same people, you know, do we consider George Jefferson a minstrel show? Or J.J. Evans, who's a Republican, dating Ann Coulter. Whew. Give me J.J. Walker.
Oh, no. What? No. Huh?
Wait, you don't know that?
J.J. is dating, not like went out once and went, no, I don't think it's going to work.
All right, let's see. J.J. Walker. I'm hoping I was wrong, and I'm going to put Ann Coulter. Ann Coulter.
Anthrax.
Anthrax. Oh, yes. Ann Coulter responds to reports she dates good. Okay, let's see. She used to, you know, they are dating. I was wrong, but they're good friends.
Okay, so when he goes, I'm just going to ask. Just going to ask. So when he goes to visit Anthrax Coulter, does he knock on the door and she opens the door and he goes, "You're so white!"
You're so white!
I'm sorry. That's going to hell for that. I was trying to come up with something that rhymes with dynamite.
No, it's but he is a Republican, which he's one of those.
Well, you know, he made his. He got his.
He made his. He, you know, I got mine. Fuck you.
Igum foo. Works every time.
You know, and I get to that point where it's like,
I know.
It saddens me, you know, when I see, because we've had this conversation before about, you know, black Republicans, gay Republicans, you know, because we shake our heads and go, for real, dog?
Did you catch, because I'm sure you're a big fan.
Oh, no.
Did you catch Mia Love's petulant takedown of Donald Trump?
No. Wait, really?
Well,
she's a Republican from Utah, right?
She's a daughter of immigrants and was like the only black woman ever elected as a Republican to the House of Representatives. And when she finally delivered her concession speech.
Oh, she lost. Who did she lose to?
Ben McAdams.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it took her forever to concede, but when she finally did, she took a shot or two at Julius Geezer. On the
but
way.
She's leaving. I mean, I don't care. Okay, but go ahead and say what she said, because, you know, whatever. Was she taking him down while she was, you know?
Well, see, when Trump was talking about the losses in the House, he said, everywhere I went and campaigned, everybody that supported me, they won. The ones that didn't support me, Mia Love gave me no love. Now Mia Love is lost.
Oh, no. Okay, so you buried the lead on that one. So what did she say in response?
Well, it just so happens that I have it here.
Oh, goody.
Let me unmute. Here we go. I think I'm about close.
This gave me a clear vision of his world as it is. No real relationships, just convenient transactions. That is an insufficient.
Okay, I went a little too far up.
Will not forget or abandon them. Now, when President Trump took a jab at me because he thought that the race was over, and he lamented that I wouldn't ask him to come to the state of Utah, I was somewhat surprised at first. But with every decision I make, I have to ask myself again, at what cost? The president's behavior towards me made me wonder, what did he have to gain by saying such a thing about a fellow Republican? It was not really about asking him to do more, was it? Or was it something else? Well, Mr. President, we'll have to chat about that. However, this gave me a clear vision of his world as it is. No real relationships, just convenient transactions. That is an insufficient way to implement sincere service and policy. Above all, my experience in the last year has provided me a big reminder of who I am and what my purpose is. This election experience and these comments shines a spotlight on the problems Washington politicians have with minorities and Black Americans. It's transactional.
Now, see, there's where she's wrong. This is not indicative of the problem that Washington politicians have with minorities.
Mm-mm.
It is the problem that Republican politicians have with minorities. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Elijah Cummings, maybe John Lewis. I can't imagine it. Maybe Emmanuel Cleaver looked at her and went, you know, what is going on in that head of yours that you are a Black woman and a Republican? Maybe they did that. I have no idea. I'm speculating.
I'm thinking, I know Maxine Waters did. Maxine Waters probably went up and slapped her upside the head a couple of times, but, you know, that's only a fantasy.
but that's about her, not about race.
When he said Mia Love, she showed me no love, you know, he tried to do wordplay, and she lost. So, he didn't say, you know, the Black woman Mia Love, you know, lost. He just said she lost because, you know, she didn't, you know, invite me to, you know, campaign for her. Now the question is, and you know, riddle me this, Batman, with her being a Black woman, do you think he would have even have come out there to campaign for her?
I doubt it. I imagine she probably knew that it would be some sort of godforsaken disaster, and she'd wind up answering for what he said for the rest of the campaign. Well, she had a little bit more to say, Tracy.
It's okay. Not personal. You see, we feel like politicians claim they know what's best for us from a safe distance, yet they're never willing to take us home.
Again, she uses politicians when she should be using the word Republicans.
Republicans.
Because Republicans never take minorities,
there we go,
communities into their homes and citizens into their homes and into their hearts, they stay with Democrats and bureaucrats in Washington because they do take them home, or at least make them feel like they have a home. I've seen the cost of conservatives for not truly taking people into their hearts. Democrats saw newly elected Black members and women to Congress in this election. This is a matter of fact that Republicans lost in this regard. However, minority communities need to ask themselves a question also. At what cost? What is the cost of staying with the Democrat Party?
Mia, It's the Democratic Party.
Democratic Party. Ooh,
Quit using the Newt Gingrich word list. And the fact of the matter is, it's not what's the cost to anybody for staying with the Democratic Party. It's how much of an ass beating am I going to take by lining up with the Republican Party? Look at all those economic anxiety feeling Rust Belt white Midwesterners who voted for Trump and how he stood in Michigan and he stood in Ohio we're gonna build more steel mills and there are gonna be more factories built. They're gonna build more cars here. Don't sell your home because they're gonna be really valuable. And yesterday, in what is, and let's remember what happened. The announcement yesterday was terrifying to tens of thousands of Americans, whether they be adults or children. When GM said, "Hey, we're gonna ditch 14,000 workers."
Done.
And now Julius Geiser thinks he can threaten GM and comes out and says, "Well, they better make something else there. They better, you know, or what, Julius Geiser?
Or what? When he said, because I kind of checked out yesterday because I worked all weekend, so I didn't hear about what was going on until this morning. And I'm like, this motherfucker here, seriously, bitch. It's like, wait, you're threatening GM? What is? You know, because we don't have, you know, nationalized companies. These are privately held companies. They can do whatever the flying fuck they want to do. And if GM decides, I'm saddened about the jobs, people losing jobs, but I'm like, you voted for him. But what was killing me is that the head of GM is a woman. So a woman basically told Trump to kiss her ass. You know, it's like, what is she going to do? What is he going to do to her? It's like, no, bitch, I got this. You know, you can't, you know, what I love what he said, they better make something like that is going to sell. Okay, the logic in that. Now, help me out with this, Bob, because sometimes, you know, I kind of get, you know, lost in, I get trapped in the weeds. But in order for you to say, they better make something that sells, don't they already have to have a proven product? Doesn't that mean that they have to, you know, they have to make it first?
Right, and look, what they're getting rid of is a car that
Chevy Cruze doesn't sell.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry to say it, but you give me a choice between a Chevy Cruze and a what? Toyota Camry?
A Corolla?
Okay, a Corolla.
A Corolla. I think the Cruze and the Corolla are about the same.
What? Nissan Sentra?
Sentra, yep.
Volkswagen Jetta?
Mm-hmm.
Well, look, there's already a whole bunch of choices that are have pretty proven track records. And the Cruze is kind of a Johnny-come-lately. So it's not surprising, but the fact that now the Trump regime is saying, well, we might, you know, we don't want to make in those electric cars. Well, the Cruze is not an electric car, but they're going to go after the tax credit, the White House says. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is, that's a law passed by Congress, and they can't just abrogate it.
Nope. As a matter of fact, they're talking about extending it.
And they'd best do
so
that.
Fair.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The car makers have the ability to make electric cars. These plants could stay open if they wanted to invest in, you know, vehicles that use renewable energy. But they don't want to because, you know, fossil fuel. So, you know, there's no incentive. Once, you know, electric cars become more, you know, more, what is it, mainstream? I mean, we have more electric cars now than I ever thought we would have. I mean,
Tesla, that has struggled so Tesla. Much. Tesla cranked past its 200,000 cumulative automobiles mark.
Exactly. I mean, when you got companies like, you know, BMW making electric cars, and I think Audi is kind of coming out with electric cars, and Volvo, you know, they're coming. But again, everybody can't afford a Tesla. Everybody can't, hell, most people can't even afford a Prius. And that's a hybrid.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because we have, you know, we have people in power that are still in denial. I mean, they're not in denial. I don't care what a lot of people say about the Republican Party and the fossil fuel companies and all these other things. They know climate change is real, but they don't give a damn because capitalism. So, you know, there's no money. There's no big money in making. There's no big money in making electric cars. If the environment actually became something that these people cared about, if they saw the end game of electric cars that made it so that more people would buy them, of course, people they would start making more electric cars. But I don't think the profit mark, like you said, Tesla is struggling, and they've made, like you said, they've made over 200,000 cars, and they're struggling. So you know, I mean, they don't. This, you know, am I wrong in this? Am I off base? Am I in the weeds? Or you know, because I'm just wondering, when is it going to be? The car manufacturers are going to start saying, you know, we need to make more electric cars. We need to make more hybrids. And we need to make them more accessible. I mean, because I know Tesla. They're coming out with their low cost Tesla, which starts at $35,000, and that's their lower range electric car.
Yeah, the one with the pedals in it. And right, I don't mean braking the accelerator. Flintstone. Tesla.
The Flintstone Tesla, and we don't, you know, let's face it, we don't really have the infrastructure across the country for electric vehicles. I mean, here in California, okay, you know, we're cool. Just about every place just pretty much every parking lot that you go to, like a mall, and even at McDonald's, a few of them, they have electric vehicle charging stations. But I live in California. How many electric vehicle charging stations do you think they have in Mississippi, Bob?
If it's like West Virginia, there's probably one at the Nissan dealership.
Right. Hell, we have right down the street from there was a DWP, Department of Water and Power charging station. I don't know what it is. I don't know what they're called. But even there, they have in the back electric vehicle charging stations. And like I said, at pretty much any mall that you go to, there's at least, like at the Westfield Culver City, there's like a whole bank of electric vehicle charging stations. Here we can do that. But, you know, like you said, in West Virginia, Mississippi, you know, so say for some crazy reason, Bob, I buy a Tesla. Not crazy reason that I buy a Tesla, but say I, you know, actually came into the money.
Win the lottery. Yeah.
Win the lottery. That's, you know, I would buy a Tesla. And I decided to take a cross country. I want to drive my Tesla cross country. I couldn't. I could not drive my car.
You'd be real hard pressed. I mean, our buddy Scott in Sweden, a year or so ago, he and his beloved took an all electric vehicle from Sweden to Spain. And even in Europe, it was a bit of an adventure plotting. And, of course, there's a lot less range on, like, a Nissan Leaf or something like that than there is on a Tesla. But it was a matter of plotting out, you know, charging station to charging station to charging station.
Right. So you are beholden to where the charging stations are in order to make your travel plan. you know, because we live in a country that refuses to acknowledge, not everybody in this country does not acknowledge climate change, but the powers that be in certain states and counties, they're like, nope, it doesn't exist, so why would we build infrastructure, you know, for renewable energy vehicles? That's just stupid, you know. But the thing is, like, you know, about these people like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, especially like Elon Musk, you know, I'm happy that he built that, you know, that he has a thing, you know, he's making Tesla. But from what I hear, not the best person to work for.
No. He has a terrible labor track record at the plant that's not too awfully far from San Francisco.
It's horrible. It is absolutely horrible. And it's sad because it's like here he has, he's still, you would hope that the man matches the product. But apparently not.
Well, but remember, Elon Musk at ground level is a libertarian. And libertarians,
that's
among
right.
other things,
right.
do not hold with ideas of labor rights.
Like you said, and you said it, like you always say, a libertarian is just a Republican that wants to smoke dope.
Well, there's that, too. Hey, by the way, Scott in San Diego says, as far as your cross-country Tesla trip, Tracy will need to buy the optional 3,000-mile extension cord. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but you said there was a bit of a Thanksgiving mishap?
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
Oh, no.
Okay. Since it was just Jan and I and Alex, we had a small turkey because it was like maybe a 10-pounder or whatever. Because Jan absolutely positively refuses to buy a frozen turkey. Every turkey that we've had in the six, going actually it'll be 7 years in January that we've been together, has to be fresh. She doesn't fuck with frozen turkeys. And I don't even like turkey, but I like her turkey. She does this thing with butter and beer, and she puts a cheesecloth over the turkey. I mean, it's a production number. And she looked it up, how long it's going to take to cook the turkey. It said about, you know, three to four hours, you know, three and a half, 4 hours. So she cooks the turkey in at 1 o'clock. Bob, I don't know what was happening with our oven, but the turkey still wasn't done at 6 o'clock, and then 7 o'clock, and still even by 8 o'clock, it still wasn't done. And so, and then my yams didn't turn out right, my greens didn't turn out right, it was use the word lightly, but it was an abortion. It was horrible. I've never...
Was it horrible, horrible?
It was horrible. It was to that point, and that was funny what you said about the Christmas story reference about the dogs. If the dogs had taken that turkey, they would have thrown it back.
Oh, Jesus. That's hard.
It was bad. It was so bad. It was just, we were a step away from doing a Christmas story and ordering Chinese. I mean, the only thing that came out without a hitch were the rolls. And that was because the only thing we had to do was take them out, those rolls that you buy in the freezer, frozen department, that rise. So those came out okay, thank God. But I can't even. It was,
well, you know, and nobody likes to talk about it, but it's been my experience that something goes wrong with at least one dish on every Thanksgiving feast.
Yeah, usually.
Unless you're Martha and Stewart making all that happen at the same time in one relatively simple consumer kitchen is damn near impossible.
Because
you just run out of
impossible.
You run out of oven space. In my case, in my the fail this year You know, everybody loves my grandmother's banana pudding. Which
you make this custard from scratch, right?
No, I mean I don't do that. No, and that's where the failure comes in. I usually use the Royal Brand flan mix. And you know, you heat it on the stove with the milk and then you pour it over everything's all set up for the banana pudding, you pour it over, and it sets up and it's freaking delicious. Well, okay. They didn't have the Royal, and I bought some other off-brand.
Oh, no.
Or it wasn't an off-brand. It was just a different brand. And it didn't make nearly as much custard.
Ooh.
And so there I am with the pan already. The Lorna Doones are in the bottom. The bananas are sliced. And I pour it over, and it just sort of sits there in the middle of the pan. And I wind up spreading it around like it's fucking icing or something. And so banana pudding became banana. I referred to it as Bob's flanana fail. But here's the best part. Next morning, I couldn't find it nowhere. It was gone.
Oh, no, because it was gone.
It was consumed. It was enjoyed. But it broke my heart.
Now, I have to take issue with you, Bob, because you are you have your bona fide. You are a Southerner, true and blue Southerner. And I understand that but you're using the flan mix and everything. But God damn it, had you just made your own fucking custard, we wouldn't be having a story.
Well, that's true too, but I don't know if I could do that.
Oh, Bob, it is so easy. Custard, I'm a decent cook. I'm a pretty good cook. Okay, I'm above decent. I'm a pretty good cook. But there are certain things that I make that I am, that I am fucking proud of. One of which is my banana pudding. This has been, I haven't made it in a while because Alex isn't a big sweet tooth person and Jen doesn't really like banana pudding, so I haven't made it in a while. But I have been perfecting my banana pudding recipe since I was a little girl. You know, when it was on the back, when they had it on the Nella wafer box. And when they make, because it's the custard that they, it's just to use flour. But instead of flour, I learned to use cornstarch, which makes it so much smoother. You don't have to worry about the lumps that are in the, that typically come to pass when you use flour. And another thing that I learned when I, because one of the horrible things about banana pudding is when you pour the custard over the bananas, because, the custard is hot, which makes basically cook the bananas. So then one year I experimented and I waited till I let the custard cool. And that made all the difference in the world. Now, I'm intrigued because you said you use Lorna Doones for your cooking.
And that is my grandmother's contribution. She wouldn't use vanilla wafers. She used Lorna Doones. And it makes a tremendous difference. It makes it more like a trifle. Or because
you trifling?
I'm trifling. it holds up better than a vanilla wafer does. But oh my God! Next time you're in Ralph's or Smith's or whatever, look at the price of a box of Lorna Doones. You will.
Are they off the chain?
You'll shriek. $5.69 for two miserable stacks of Lorna Doones.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Things
are getting so expensive. It is just, it is beyond belief on, when you get a box of cereal, it's $5 for a box of fucking cereal.
Oh, I know.
On a happy note.
Yes.
Speaking of, things going up and wages not going up to match, prices going up. Alex might be getting a real job. Oh my God.
Yay.
yay. I have a friend of mine that used to be my supervisor at Yellow Cab, and he since has left the company to go work for UPS. It's not actually, I forget what he said, it's a company owned by UPS, but it's not exactly UPS, but they have, they pay well, and they have benefits and vacation. And I was like, vacation pay, what's that? He's never had a job that, you know, he doesn't understand the concept. I said, son, that means when you go on vacation, you still get paid. He's like, excuse me, what? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, you're still on the clock.
You're still on the clock. He's like, what?
That can happen?
Like that. That can happen. And so if he gets, and he has an in, basically. He just basically has to pass the background check, which he will. But wherever, apparently, he has to go through the TSA background check as well, because we're going to be picking up from, you know, bringing stuff to him from LAX. And if he gets his hazmat materials certification, that's even more money. But it sounds like he'll be starting off at about $20 an hour.
Man, that'd be nice. That would be real nice. Hey, I sure do hope he gets that. That'd be awesome. That would, and
oh my
you
God,
said it
that
like an
be...
offshoot of UPS. If he's lucky, and even the offshoot has a union contract with the Teamsters, that would even be better still.
Even better still, because union. I'm like, shit. If my back wasn't so fucked up, I would go apply.
Well, yeah. Hey, and let me throw one thing out there for your consideration. I mean, I don't know that this was the cause. You were talking about the turkey took forever to get done. When you go into a big box store or whatever, go into the kitchen section, and there are thermometers in there, and they just hang. They're designed so that they'll hang on the rack
inside your
oven. Well, get one of those thermometers, have the oven empty, stick that thermometer in there, and run it up to 450 degrees. And then look at that thermometer and see if it says 450 degrees.
Oh, I forgot the second part of the story. Because the oven went, I mean, it was weird because some things were cooked, but the turkey didn't. So we had somebody come out yesterday and look at the oven, and yes, there was something wrong with our oven, and yes, it cost us $300 to get fixed. Yeah.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, on top of that, so that was Monday. Yes, on Sunday, I get a call from Jan. She's like, guess what your son did? I'm like, oh, Jesus.
Uh-oh, it's your son.
Yeah, so Alex was hanging Christmas lights and inadvertently put the ladder too close to the window.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's another $200-some-odd. No,
damn.
Yes, 200-and-something. So basically from Saturday, from yesterday.
Oh, hell, it's Southern California. What do you need the window for?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, fortunately, we're going to get rain. Unfortunately, for the people who live in the burn areas, we're going to get rain. And, for you know, they're never right with the weather report. But if they are, it's going to be really bad. And, you know, now we've got to worry. Those people have got to worry about mudslides. Oh, speaking of Southern California, so, the Wednesday before the horrible fires, they had the shooting in Thousand Oaks, and then by Thursday, Thousand Oaks and the surrounding areas in Ventura County and L.A. County were, you know, on fire. So, apparently, the city council Ventura City Council is considering, because I guess they have a big gun show there every year at the county fairground.
Yeah, hopefully no more.
And I don't know what, because I think the meeting was today. They were having a private meeting today, and then it was going to be open for public, you know, comment. but they are considering no longer allowing gun shows in Ventura County.
It's a start.
It's a start. I don't know how the gun nuts are out here, you know, but we shall see. And I hope so. I mean, again, you know, if you want to have a gun, you know, again, it should be, you know, background check, waiting periods, and it should be mandated across the country. It should be a federal law.
It should be uniform.
It should be uniform. It, you know, just because I live in, you know, we have pretty strict gun laws in California, and I know they have them in New York and others, you know, and a smattering of states around the country, but it should be uniform. That should be it. Like voting rights, you know, I shouldn't need an ID to vote. I shouldn't have to worry about, I mean, I don't need an ID out here in California. But so if I don't need an ID in California to vote, why should I need an ID in West Virginia, Mississippi, Texas, wherever? If they don't need to verify my signature in California to vote, why do we have to verify my signature in Georgia? You know,
right?
People shouldn't be able to pick and choose how you get to vote. It should be uniform across the country, because obviously we don't. I mean, not that we worry. I mean, voter fraud is bullshit. So, you know, obviously we don't worry about voter fraud in California. So why should we have to worry about? Why would you have to worry about voter fraud anywhere else? I'm just, you know, but that's just me. I live in a, you know.
I know.
So I know you got to go because I know there's other people. Oh, how's your fundraising going?
Well, we wrapped up for the month and qualified for the.
So this is the week free.
This
week
is fundraising free radio. Of course, I'm gone Thursday and Friday because I'm.
Where are you going? I kind of cut the tail end of that.
Malloy's having his book signing party down in North Georgia, and we're leaving Thursday morning and going down for that.
Oh, nice!
And nice. I've been I'm taking a whole bunch of smoked pork butts and a couple of smoked turkeys with me.
Is that what the picture was that I saw?
Yes.
Earlier today.
Yes.
Oh, them some good looking vittles.
And you know.
Did I say it right? Did I say it right?
Yes, you said that right. That's how it's pronounced. Vittles. V-I-C-T-U-A-L-S. Vittles. And one of those was the test butt, and I can tell you it tested out well.
Oh my God! Only you, Bob. Only you.
Well, I had to. I'm not gonna take it down there.
Agnes, baby, come on! I gotta test the butt.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And you know, 25 years in, she no longer slaps me when I say that.
Yes, because if you rolled up on me and said, "Yo, Tracy, can we test the butt?" I have to look at you real hard. There would be a side eye thing going on. That is like, excuse me, so what?
Oh, without a doubt. And but it's real. It turned out real good. And so
I am so happy for you.
Between the pulled pork and the turkeys, it should be pretty special.
That's so awesome. And you guys will be back on the weekend on Saturday? We'll either get back
Sunday night or Monday morning.
Okay. Well, safe travels. See, I'm so fortunate, you know, you being a white man, you wouldn't have to worry about using the Green Book to travel.
That's true. We use the Hillbilly Book.
The Hillbilly Book.
Mm-hmm.
But
we don't go to restaurants that don't serve grits.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of grits, I had a brunch and I told Todd about it. And so I did breakfast potatoes in the crock pot, you know, red potatoes with bell peppers and onions and
a lot of garlic,
and seasoning salt. And then and butter and olive oil, and that, you know, set that out to cook the night before. And I got stone ground grits and put those in a crock pot as well.
hey, you know what? I bet it worked out in the crock pot. Were they nice and creamy?
Yes. They were nice and creamy because I used, instead of water, I used chicken stock.
But nice call. Nice call. And by the way, I can tell you that Tillamook shredded, not hunks, but shreds of Tillamook cheddar have finally made it all the way here to West Virginia.
You've got Tillamook? Have you tried it yet?
And I put some shredded Tillamook sharp cheddar in some grits. Well, Agnes did. I didn't.
Did the celestial choir start singing?
Yes, it did. And then there was the Cajun roast beef sandwich on sourdough with the Tillamook shreds, and that was a beef and cheddar sandwich for the freaking ages.
Has the ice cream made it out to you yet?
No. The only thing they had a Mexican four cheese, a mozzarella, and the cheddar shreds. It was all shredded.
Hey, there's a digital coupon at Ralph's. Well, Kroger, Ralph's, like $1 off the Tillamook. Just saying.
Oh, damn, I'll have to check my Kroger app.
Check your Kroger app. I mean, they have it out here, and it's good until.
But you had mentioned it in the past, and I wanted to let you know that it was everything you said.
Well, I told you on Jen and I's travels when we went to visit my sister in Oregon, we didn't even realize it. It was hilarious. We're, you know, taking a hike, you know, I don't guess it was one-on-one or whatever, and we're driving, and we drove right into Tillamook, Oregon. They have this huge factory there, Bob. They have an ice cream counter. And a restaurant and a deli counter with Tillamook cheeses and sausages and just scrumptiousness, and you just kind of it was just beautiful. It was wonderful. I mean, and of course free samples, Bob. So you get the free samples of the Tillamook ice cream. You get the free samples of the Tillamook cheese. Yes. Yes, Queen. It was awesome. So on that. Oh, and on the note before I go, you must, when you get a chance, read Michelle Obama's book.
Okay, so you're reading it now?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I am.
Verdict?
And I'm loving it. But then. I'm biased because I wish it is so funny. I wrote a paper once about what it would have been like as a little black girl to have a role model like Michelle Obama.
Well, you will love, by the way, we haven't touched on it, but just one of the funnier graphic images I've seen in the last couple of days was a picture of melanoma photoshopped into Michelle's picture on the cover of the book. And it says becoming, and somebody has like very poorly written Melania Trump over Michelle's name at the bottom of the book. I about spit take the computer monitor when I saw that.
That's hilarious.
And the Christmas trees, by the way, the Christmas trees from hell.
Oh, yeah, the blood red Christmas trees. What the entire fuck is that shit?
Well, I mean, Agnes took one look and she said, clearly she's remembering her childhood growing up among the blood forest of Vlad the Impaler.
Yes. It was a nightmare.
I heard that there was actual video. You know, there's that one picture of her standing among them. There was video of her walking among them singing, "It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas."
Oh, you got. But one more thing about Michelle Obama. This is the state of, I've always said about how, I didn't learn anything about my history as a black person in this country until I got into my 30s. Because the only thing I knew about being black and the only contributions that I knew about black Americans were, Martin Luther King,
We were slaves, Lincoln freed us, and Martin Luther King. Oh, yeah, and George Washington Carver. You know, thrown as a good measure. But it wasn't that I didn't have role models. I was not allowed to know about my role model.
There is because a big damn difference.
Before Michelle Obama, there was Ida B. Wells. Before Michelle Obama, there was, you know, Shirley Chisholm. Before Michelle Obama, there was Fannie Lou Hamer. And the list goes on and on and on. All these amazing, strong, independent black women that had a little black girl like me knew, known about her, them, Angela Davis, all these women. Who knows where this, what the trajectory of my life would have taken? Who knows? Because I know. I know that had I known about somebody like Fannie Lou Hamer, and especially like Shirley Chisholm, I know I probably would have ran for public office. I know this to my core that I would have run for public office because I would have known it was possible, you know. But see, I didn't know it was possible. And that's, and those are those things when we talk about people run, you know, national office is great, but when we need those people in local offices and state and county and city, because those are the people that are on school boards that that does the curriculum, that shows that, you know, ethnic studies are important, not just for Black Americans, but for Native Americans, for you know, Hispanic Americans, for Asian Americans, all these people who all their lives knew nothing about their contributions, because if they go to these schools, there's nothing. Apps are the bare minimum. It is so ridiculous that, you know, the only, like they said, the history goes to the victor. So until we start getting people in these places to make a difference, it's going to always be that way. But at least we here in Texas, they're finally going to put in the history books that the Civil War, that was the direct cause of the Civil War, was slavery.
And no further debate. You know, yeah.
And no further debate. So things are changing. So on that note, good night.
Well, thank you very kindly. If we don't talk again, hopefully you have a wonderful weekend, and
Green Book this weekend. So
I don't want to keep you or anything, but I have heard that movie getting called everything but a film.
Yeah, I read a story about it, and this one sister wrote that Green Book was a book about racism, written by white people for white people.
Well, among other things, the family has said, hey, nobody so much as asked us diddly about his life.
The black family?
Yeah.
What's this? Oh, my God.
His name escapes me. I apologize. But his family said, his family has said, nope, nobody asked us anything. And apparently just flat out made up shit about the family.
So basically we have another version of The Help.
I have a feeling that this may very well make The Help look like a production of the NAACP's Cultural Outreach Committee.
Oh, shit. Oh. Well, see, that's why there's such a thing as $5 Tuesdays.
That's exactly what it's for.
You know, I joined just the other day the AMC A-List for $19 a month. I could see up to 3 movies a week at any AMC, whatever showings or what have you. So, you know.
Damn, that sounds like a pretty good deal.
Yeah, so you can see 3 movies a week, or you can see 3 movies in one day if you want. And then, you know, so I can see.
And if you lay off the popcorn, you can come out ahead.
Yeah, definitely. For 19 bucks, or 20 bucks a month, you really can't go wrong. Hell,
out here, because it's like $15 to go to a movie if you're lucky. So if I just go see two movies a month, it's already paid for.
Well, I would think that'll get some people into the theater. I look forward to the reviews.
Yes. So I will let you know if it was just like really, but you know, we as Black people, we do get excited when our stories are told, but then again, it's about who's telling the story.
There we go.
So we shall see. I mean, we can't always have a movie like Hidden Figures, which was amazing.
I love that movie.
That movie was just phenomenal. I think one of my favorite parts of the movie was when Octavia Spencer, when they go into the library, and, you know, this is the Black section and the white section, and she gets the book on Fortran. And, of course, they weren't going to let her check it out. She just took it. She's like, my tax dollars pays for this. She's like, so the book is mine. And I don't know if that really happened, but I don't care. Just the fact that it happened in the movie was good enough for me.
You like the idea of it happening.
I like the idea of it happening. Even if it didn't happen, even if they did it just for dramatic license, I don't care. But the way these women were portrayed in this movie, I think I cannot imagine that it did not happen.
Oh,
so
without
on
a
that
doubt.
Note, I'm,
well, Tracy, have a lovely evening. It's been I'm so glad you called in. You know, I fret. But
I know you fret.
It's my job.
That's your job, but you know, I may not communicate with you on the phone, but, you know, I do every so often send you stuff, you know, wonderful tidbits to read. So, you know, I'm always in the ether.
All right, Tracy, you take care, dear.
You too, my love. Good
right,
night.
Bye now. The one and only Tracy, the lady cab driver from Southern California. About 19 before the hour, let's run over to the back to the stress line. Hey, thanks for waiting so long.
Hey, Bob, it's me.
Hey, Reggie.
From Decatur, Georgia.
Sorry I lost you earlier, man.
Right. Well, how do you feel about Speaker Nancy Pelosi's statement saying that the media obsesses far way too much over Donald Trump, you know, by covering him every day and night, you know, 24/7? How do you feel about that? Do you agree or disagree with her? Yes or no?
That's a little. It sounds a little like an exam question, Reggie. But but the fact of the matter is, obsessing over every last little thing. Yeah, she's probably right. I'd like to focus. I mean, and I'm guilty of it. I'm absolutely guilty of it because the man, and I use the term man loosely. Is so egregiously outrageous, it's almost impossible to pull yourself away from the insanity.
Right. But, you know, right. And if Ainsley Earnhardt loved the troops so much, why don't she go and become one herself? The Mexican border troops. Want to sleep with all of them. I'm sure they all would love that. If she loves and supports them so much, why don't she become one herself?
Well, that's for other people to do.
Right.
I mean, that's the way it is with the chicken hawks. It's like that god awful Tommy Lahren saying that the height of her Thanksgiving Day was watching children get tear gassed.
Right.
For what she described as bum rushing the border.
Right. And they were only throwing rocks. Thank God those troops didn't have a gun. You know what I mean?
Well, they weren't troops.
They were
border patrol.
Exactly.
The troops weren't the military weren't even necessary or called in.
Right. So maybe Ainsley Earnhardt and Tommy Lahren should go and become border patrol, Mexican border patrol troops to see what it's like and how it feels like. And
what I'd rather see, Reggie, is see some border patrol agents say, "I refuse to gas any more children. I quit."
Right. I would too. No matter how much money they're getting paid for, nothing's worth that kind of money. It's the principle of the thing.
It's the principle of the thing. Right, Bob?
Well, it's...
And like you said...
I mean, it's just a matter that you don't participate in inhuman actions.
Yes. And when is the last time have any of these people, I'm talking about the Fox News bots, male and female, or anybody else been fought in a war, any war, no matter what it is?
Now you can look a long way for that, Reggie.
Because they're not going to do it. They don't want to get shot or shot at. Because war is hell, you know. They don't want to come out of their comfort safety zone bubble that they sat on for so very long to go out into the real world, the harshest of all harsh real realities and real world. Or even report from the, shall we say, the comeback zone. Like you said, they're a bunch of chicken hawks. And that goes for radio, too.
Oh, Hannity.
Conservative talk radio.
Yeah, Hannity, yeah. Whatever, yeah.
Yeah, conservative talk radio. Isn't he the one that said that he would gladly get waterboarded just to see how a big tough man he is? That he would gladly get waterboarded? I wonder how long that lasted.
He's never come through on any of that. No,
he has not. And like I said before, you know, Ted Nugent, shitting on him, pissing shit all over himself just to get out of Vietnam, serving Vietnam. But yet he's a game hunter, you know, survivalist.
Those are the folks I'd love to see with their head shaved going through basic. You know, your Don Jr., your Eric.
Yes.
But remember, the Trumps, to the best of my knowledge, have never served in the military at all. Through multiple generations. And in fact, some historical researchers in Germany have just recently discovered the actual document that shows Trump's, his grandfather, great-grandfather, something like that.
Right.
Expulsion from Germany for being a draft dodging coward.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can find the article, Reggie, over at The Guardian.
Right.
It's from the 21st of November.
Right.
A historian discovered a royal decree issued to Donald Trump's grandfather ordering him to leave Germany and never come back.
Well, if his granddaddy was a draft dodger and his father was too, that makes him and his sons one.
Friedrich Trump issued a document in February 1905, ordered to leave the Kingdom of Bavaria within 8 weeks and never to return.
Right. Right, so they all draft dodgers, right? And yet, these are the exact same people who accused Bill Clinton of being a draft dodger himself, right?
Yeah, right.
The exact same people. And yet, they were all born draft dodgers. And they never saw a war, period.
Never heard a shot fired in anger.
Or never used a gun, right.
Well, but do remember that Trump's daddy did participate in a Klan riot in Jamaica, Queens in 1927.
Oh, I'm sure nothing happened to him back then.
And when he was arrested, he was wearing his Klan robes.
Yes, I wonder how long he served jail time.
None.
Not at all.
He was immediately released.
I should have known. I've got the times back then. Of course, he wasn't going to go to prison. Neither with his granddaddy. Right?
Right.
Neither with his granddaddy. Or even Trump himself. If he was in a Klan meeting, you know?
Right.
And
look, I mean, all we have to do is follow him down through his history. He and his daddy get busted for racist landlord-tenant practices back in the 70s. I mean,
right.
there's really nothing to say. There's no defense for him. The man is an unreconstructed racist. He's living proof that you don't have to be, if you're white, you don't have to be from Mississippi or Alabama or Georgia or South Carolina or anywhere in the South to be a racist. It's entrenched in the North as well. Hey, Reggie, I'm going to try to get, I'm going to try to fit one more phone call in, man. Good to hear from you. Thanks for waiting so long. I appreciate your patience.
Okay, Bob, and did you hear about Jim Acosta going after Sarah Sanders again as he got back inside the White House? His press, hardcore press pass and all?
No, I didn't, but I did see where she said today that those little kids, those little toddlers damned well deserve to be gassed.
What if it was her kids that were gassed? And her too.
Well, they don't think like that because their privilege is never going to be challenged to the point where they reach that level of desperation.
Right, and you know, their kids were gassed. Yeah, like you said, the white privilege, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, right.
All right, Reggie, you have yourself a good night, man. Talk to you later.
Yeah, you do too, Bob.
Bye now.
Have a safe journey on your trip.
Thank you very kindly. Bye.
Thank you, sir. Bye.
Somebody, Reggie from down in Decatur. Yeah, Darlene in Connecticut pointing out draft dodging. Consanguinity. So it's in the Trump genetics. Fascinating. Yeah, remember, according to Trump, it's all in the genes. I've got very good genes. I've got great genes. I've got great racist, Klansman, draft dodging, cowardly genes. Right. And I guess we'll make the last call of the evening. We'll run over and check in with Scott in San Diego. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. Happy Tuesday to you.
Well, thank you very kindly. And I need to send out thanks real quick to Paul. We haven't been fundraising this evening, but Paul just kicked in and said, it's a Giving Tuesday donation. Thank you, Paul. Jill had done that earlier as well. Thank you to both of you. Thank you very kindly. I'm sorry you had to wait so long, but appreciate the persistence.
You know, what else am I going to do? Where else am I going to go? I lead a very drab, wretched life.
Now,
there's not a lot going on. There's truly
You're in
not.
San Diego. You could go down to the border and report.
Well, I'll be happy to report if you'd like. There is a story that is probably not getting, it's getting little, if any, mention, I'm sure, in the national press, although I haven't looked to verify it, but it wouldn't surprise me if I'm not correct. But first, I've got a point of order on your banana pudding.
Yes.
Recipe. Wouldn't Lorna Doones, given the consistency of them, wouldn't they just like dissolve?
No, they don't.
They're almost melt in your mouth, you know,
It's kind of like how a ladyfinger behaves in tiramisu.
Wait a minute. You've made my head spin.
That didn't come out right, did it?
I'm not a ladyfinger, that's like a little sponge cake or something,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. What was the other part, though, that I didn't?
In tiramisu.
I don't know what that is.
The Italian dessert, like powdered ladyfingers, custard, powdered espresso.
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, maybe I know it, but just didn't know the name.
And like the ladyfinger gets soaked in espresso.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll have to give that a whirl, that banana pudding recipe, because I haven't had that for years. And you're right about the price of Lorna Doones. Jesus, you need a co-signer.
God damn, it's breathtaking.
And there's no store brand that I've been able to find.
No, there isn't. I mean, I have experimented over the years. I've tried with, like, pecan sandies and those Pepperidge Farm shortbread chessmen.
Yeah, I used to like Pepperidge Farm.
Not the same.
Well, anyway, the story that's not getting a lot of press... nationally, I'm sure. Over the weekend, when they closed the border, and then they had the tear gas incident. Those were two different things. Am I right?
Well, semi-simultaneous, but yeah.
Okay. Well, a lot of people, and it was on our local news here, the NBC owned and operated local station, NBC7, interviewed a number of business owners on the U.S. side. Small business owners on the U.S. side in the little towns of, say, San Ysidro and down that way, right there near the border. And the international outlet, there's a big outlet mall down there. Oh, thank you, Emma. UPS is leaving me goodies. Wait a minute. But anyway, wait a minute. Let me step out and, ooh, two packages. Ooh. Well, this is good news, Bob. This is good, good news. I got me my store brand nicotine gum from CVS, and I got a book about the JFK assassination. Is a new book, and I sincerely hope that it's not some nut bucket running riot. But if the description on Amazon Prime was even half true, I'll never get a good night's sleep again.
Oh, dear.
God, let me open up this fucking gum.
Jonesing, are we?
Yes. Well, I've cut back on it since I've started smoking a pipe again. And I kind of over... I didn't space out my usage for my monthly allotment.
No, and you just had one of those nights where you went on a mad nicotine binge.
Yeah, just chawing my brain.
Just down. had a jaw full of it. Looked like Danny Murtaugh, the 70s Pirates, with a cheek full of tobacco.
Yeah, the only thing you can't do is spit the juice or blow a bubble, but otherwise it provides intense.
Yeah,
relief.
It may look like a chiclet, but it doesn't have quite the same heft.
You know, the only difference I can tell, the shape is the same, but they're like minusculely smaller than the Nicorette. And it remains to be seen how potent and worthwhile they are in terms of efficacy. But anyway, I didn't call to tell you about my nicotine habit. What happened was, coinciding with the madness down at the border, these small businesses, mom and pop stores mostly, but also an international outlet, major name brand outlet mall, lost big time money because a lot of their customers, I would say, dare say the majority of their customers, come up from the other side of the border. Because shopping, let's face it, is better up here. The prices are better, the selection is better. You know, it's a better deal all the way around. But because of the madness on the border and the border being closed, the people who shop couldn't get up to do it over this period. And one little guy, a store owner, owns a couple of small clothing stores down in San Ysidro. He said he estimates they lost about $20,000 or $30,000 in one day.
Well, send the bill to Donald Trump. He won't pay it.
No, he won't. He won't. And it's just crazy that first of all, it's crazy that fool is in charge, okay? That's the first bit of crazy. And it's crazy that after all these years, I think the last time they closed the border, if memory serves me, was in the very early 70s. It was around the time the DEA was begun, and it was Nixon's doing, and it had to do with the drug trafficking from below the border to up here. And they didn't exactly close it, but they slowed it down to the point where you may as well say it was closed. And it went on for some amount of time until Congress people and senators in Texas and California and other border states put a kibosh on it and said, look, this is starting to affect our economy. But it's heartbreaking that this asinine stuff is going on. And we have got to get a grip, first of all, but we've got to come to terms with what can be done and what needs to be done and what is best to be done in terms of immigration and settle it once and for all, because it's a problem.
But, yeah, but to be fair, Scott, I don't think you can settle it once and for all, because the people we're bitching about, I'm sorry, that word comes too easy. I apologize.
Mm-hmm.
The people that we're carping about are more or less only doing what they've been doing for about 15,000 years, and that is moving up and down the two continents, which are really just one long continent of this hemisphere.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at Eurasia, well, the migratory patterns tend to run east-west for the most part. In the Western Hemisphere, the migratory patterns run north-south. And people have been migrating back and forth, and then, you know, within North America, some east-west, but from time immemorial. The entire history of the population of this hemisphere is one of migration. Migration is the single most common element that binds all of humanity together. Because we are, you know, because we've got these funky primate brains, when shit gets to where we can't stand it where we are, we go somewhere else.
Well, yeah, look at in the wake of the dust storms and the depression in the 30s, the migration of Okies, and I know that's probably a pejorative term to some people, but Okies and folks from Arkansas and parts of Texas and the Midwest and all.
Getting away from the damn Dust Bowl.
Where did they head? They came to California. This
yeah, they damn sure didn't go back to Appalachia.
No. And that's the thing. This state has always been a place where you actually have a chance to make it. I know the song New York, New York. If I can make it there, I can make it anywhere. But California is the golden state in the sense that it has always been a place where people who have some sense about them and a drive about them and a willingness to work together with other people of like mind can make it. I mean, look at Hollywood, for Christ's sake. At the turn of the last century, the motion picture industry, by and large, was in northern New Jersey and Astoria, part of the city of New York, one of the outer boroughs. Astoria, what was that, Queens? Okay. The weather didn't cooperate because they didn't have big electric lights. They used natural light. So they said, well, where else is there more natural light than the Los Angeles area? So mayor and the guy that ran, what do you call it, Paramount or Universal, I always get them confused. A couple of the initial movers and shakers brought the operation, the production side of it, out here to sunny California.
And emphasis on the word sunny.
And you see how big the fucking movie industry got.
Well, yeah, and you know, I haven't made much mention of it, given my proclivities relative to religion, it's kind of surprising. But
yeah.
this twit who got himself pincushioned out in the Indian Ocean.
Oh, God, yes. That was funny on some level.
Consider the Sentinelese. I'm a little bit skeptical of anybody who can positively say, well, you know, these people have been there for 60,000 years. Because, well, I don't know, maybe they have. But the bottom line is they don't have a lot of contact, and they do not want contact with the larger world around them, whether it be people from India or people from Myanmar, Bangladesh, what have you. They want to be left the fuck alone.
Yeah.
And
who can blame them?
Well, yeah. But the thing is, they are, if indeed their occupation of that area goes back to 60,000 years ago, what you're talking about is one of the most profound aspects or profound examples of human migration. You know, it is said that the Aboriginal people of Australia are you know, were until they were largely or nearly wiped out by British colonialists. They were, you know, they lived in a in an unbroken line that went back to migratory patterns that came all the way out of, you know, out of Mother Africa. And it's just what human beings do. So to, you know, we've shot over a couple of minutes, but just to bring the point home, I don't think you can legislate that kind of human behavior. And once you get beyond that, you also have to deal with the fact that, you know, Donnie Dipshit constantly ballyhoos, oh, we've got the lowest unemployment ever. Well, maybe, but if you want to have a growing economy, you've got to have people who can work it.
Well, and see, that's pretty much what I was getting at. When I said to settle it and work it out once and for all, what I really meant was, if you ever watch that documentary, the multi-part documentary series, New York, by Rick Burns, the brother of Ken Burns, you'll see a pattern. As the new arrivals came to New York, New York City and the boroughs and all, I forget the order, but the Irish, the Italians, the Germans, the Puerto Ricans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What happened was the newest arrival each time got the crappiest jobs. But the thing was, they got the jobs and they had a drive and an urge for improvement and doing better and making it. And many of them did. And that's the American way. What I'm saying is we need to look at what is needful to do, what's appropriate to do, and what fits in with our national story. If we did at least that, we would pardon me, we'd be doing something. It would be a big step in the right direction. And, you know, as far as this poor sap on the island who got himself pincushioned, it reminded me of the young missionary Mark Twain once wrote about, who went out among the cannibals. They listened with the greatest of interest to everything he had to say, and then they ate him. So good for them and good for him.
I know. Yeah, two cannibals are eating a clown. One looks at the other and says, "This tastes funny to you?"
Well, and the other one was, you know, you go to the cannibal restaurant and you look at all the entrees, and they're all reasonably priced. But then you get to Radio Network Vice President, and it's like five times the cost of anything else on the menu. And the guy asked the waiter about it, and the waiter says, "Well, have you ever tried to clean one?" So on that happy note, thank you.
Oh, that's a perfect ending place.
Yeah, and that works with all manner of executives, not just radio, could be TV, could be cable news,
yeah.
You know. You ever try to clean one? And I'll give credit to my old pal Willard Scott. He gave that line once, and it just has stuck with me, and I've used it over these many years, and it's a funny line, it's true, if you've ever dealt with executives.
Yeah, but you know what? It would probably, just because of my sick, twisted imagination, it works better with missionary.
Yeah, yeah.
When you consider all that, but now we're explaining a joke. And
let me ask you something. I know we're way over time. What's the deal with Mueller? Is the shit going to hit the fan pretty soon?
I've given up. I said a long time ago, these things take a long time. And he is moving methodically through whatever it is he's doing. I would like to think that at some point in time that he will tack Donald Trump's hide up on the wall. But I'm a little cynical. No, I'm a lot cynical. And the fact of the matter is, he's a Republican, too. Well, and Republicans protect Republicans.
The reason I bring it up is last night there was this thing about Manafort apparently lied and didn't cooperate anywhere near as much as he said he was going to.
Yeah, it was the lying part.
And then there was the thing out of, I guess, The Guardian that Manafort, as recently as 2015, met with Assange in the embassy there in wherever it was, in London, I guess.
Yeah, about which, by the way, the folks at WikiLeaks, who were channeling their inner Mohammed bin Salman, said that they would bet The Guardian $1 million and the head of the editor that Assange never met with Manafort.
Well, see, we need to really get to the bottom of this because it's I'm growing tired of it. And I know that's selfish of me, but I like resolution.
No, just channel your inner con and say, it tasks me. It tasks me.
Okay.
There's our Star Trek reference for the evening.
All right, Bob.
But no, it's just going to be what it's going to be. And at this point in time, I think it's at least obvious to me that there is no percentage in Mueller doing anything overt until January, when he at least will have a if there is damning information, he will at least have a Democratic House that can make some pretense of protecting him.
Yeah. Well, and at this rate, right now, I think there's only about 18 working days in this current House and Senate on the calendar, maybe less. I don't have the page in front of me, but there's not many working days, and I know they can do mischief. They're like children. They can do great mischief in a small amount of time. But let's hope that they don't, because we really need to get the new crew installed and
let them get let them get their feet under them.
Yeah, yeah. All right, man. I'll let you go. You're on tomorrow?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just no program Thursday or Friday.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll hum to ourselves. We'll play Christmas music. I found a tape of in-store music from Kmart, 2 hours of Christmas music, circa 1974. I'll send that to you.
Oh my God!
You can drive.
Does it have the drop-ins attention, Kmart shoppers?
I've only read the description, but I believe it begins with a little Kmart jingle, and I think there are things about don't shoplift, you don't want to steal. You know, interspersed. I'll send you the link. It's a YouTube link.
Oh, wait. One thing before you go.
Yeah.
Since we're talking about audio,
All right.
We can have a minute for this.
Okay.
Ferg turned me onto this today. You know, we talk about food porn here a lot. And he played this for me, and I couldn't stop laughing. What this is a series of outtakes of Gordon Ramsay. And the video is what the video is. I mean, it just, yeah. But my God, whoever, and this is, you know, this is somebody with an ear and the patience to edit audio. And that says something. And he played this for me, and Jesus God, I couldn't stop laughing. So without further ado, food porn, if you will, with Gordon Ramsay.
I'm going to give you some pointers for the big night. So if you're feeling adventurous, follow this. You need a really nice, robust tart. What we're looking for is a really nice broad, the most popular bird in the country, flexible body, semi-firm breasts, but quite bouncy. And then just lift up the skirt. And they get excited, so they look wet. Open up the legs, two beautiful thighs, three fingers. Get your hand and almost treat your hand like a sort of whisk. Push your fingers in there, and it's nice and moist. And smelling very fragrant. And that confirms she's ready for up and down motion. That's not rocket science, is it? That's common sense. Do not be scared about the bottom. Don't worry. That's classed as the dark brown Rolls Royce part. It's full of flavour. So treat it with some respect and get really nice and comfortable. And then turn her over and bang. Up.
I won't go any further.
I love it. My glass is fogged up. I haven't been this excited since high school in the back of that Econo van with the Giuseppe sisters, Angelique and Celeste.
But it just goes to show the kind of language that gets used in these, you know, in these cooking programs. Somebody yeah. noticed that there's a sort of overt sexuality to it.
Yeah. And it's very tactile.
Or not overt, but, you know.
It's very tactile.
Subliminal,
and
subliminal.
Yeah. Love it. Okay, well, I mean, you made me hungry now for Lorna Doones. Maybe I'll walk down to Vaughn's across the way here. It's the closest walk-to grocery store. And they're...
And
their
by the way, Irish Dave wanted to know a little bit ago, do you take the blue trolley line to TJ?
Oh, I haven't been down there in quite a while. I mean, when I used to live in Imperial Beach, I was going to go across the border one day. This is 10, 12 years ago. And I got down there, and it was like, I don't know, just very scuzzy. I've never actually been across the border. But with the state of things nowadays, I would not go. I mean, it holds nothing for me. I mean, if I want madness, there's plenty of madness on my side of the border. But I'm all the time finding pesos. Just every once a year, I'll find at least one or two lying around on the ground. I guess that's what they are. They're little coins with a little copper insert in the center. And I'm pretty sure they're peso coins. But I'll never spend them down there because I ain't going.
Well,
I ain't going.
But just hearing that reference to TJ reminds me of the lyric from Steely Dan's Babylon Sisters off the Gaucho album. I should know by now that it's just a spasm, like a Sunday in TJ, that it's cheap, but it's not free.
Yeah. You say that again.
You can't. All right. And Steely Dan lyrics, you just can't beat them. Anyway.
I will warn you now. I will call for prayer meeting Wednesday because I must relate the story of the stark raving mad bus driver I had on the ride home yesterday. It was priceless. Now,
did you have a friend of Jesus on the bus?
Oh, this guy was more than a friend of Jesus. This guy was talking Satan's influence in Hollyweird and shape-shifting reptilians in charge of
I had no idea. I had no idea that Alex Jones had bus driving skills.
No, this guy.
Let's not ruin it.
Okay. All right. But I'm telling you, this guy was a piece of work, and I'll leave you with that, and I'll check in tomorrow and give you the full story because it was a trippy trip.
It sounds like one for the ages. Scott, you have yourself a good evening.
All right, Bob. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye.
Oh, I potted down the wrong. Yeah, there we go. So 18 minutes late, we're going to get out of the program now. That kind of makes up for some of the time we lost last night when we were so rudely interrupted by the aging, rickety, falling apart, so last century coal-fried power grid going down, courtesy of Appalachian Power. But thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to each and every one of you each and every month who make it possible for this program to exist. Thank you so much. Thank you for everyone who jumped in this evening. Thank you. Thank you, Ralphs, for your Trash Fits Walker Stand Challenge. Thank you, Steve in New York, for your Go Bucks Challenge. Thank you to Jill and Paul for the Giving Tuesday contribution. It means a lot. Thank you so very much indeed. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thank you so very kindly to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.